To the half of the members of the House that are present, we will stand at ease for about another 15 minutes. There are a number of bill signings downstairs that should be done in about 15 minutes, so we will stand at ease until the sound of the gavel. The House will come to order. We are at that order of business of bills on second reading. The first bill for our consideration is Senate File 70.
Mr. Speaker.
Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Privilege of the floor.
Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. You know, it's not often that we get visitors from Tokyo, but we have a few here in the south balcony on my left. Please stand up. And please welcome Shinzaburo Hino, Moenhiro Yoshida, Yuji Sawatomi, Hiroshima Ogawa, and Osama Takahashi. Please welcome them to Wyoming.
Welcome, gentlemen.
Mr. Speaker.
Representative Miller.
I might add that this is their first time in Wyoming also. So thanks for that arousing welcome.
Representative Childers.
Mr. Speaker, your committee on Senate File 69, a little bill concerning natural resources, which is now a free committee, will be meeting in room S14, which is the Senate TRW meeting upon adjournment.
Mr. Speaker.
Representative Korberg.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your conference committee number one on Senate File 18 will meet upon adjournment in House 18.
Representative McComey.
Senate File 70, introduced by the Education Committee, an act relating to school finance amendments.
There are some amendments. Representative McComey.
Mr. Speaker, I respectfully withdraw first reading amendment to number two, and I will second reading amendment to number two, and I will bring it back on third reading. I need more data.
Without objection, second reading amendment number one to Senate File 70 has been withdrawn. We are now on second reading amendment number two. Representative Warren.
Mr. Speaker, thank you. I move second reading amendment number two to Senate File 70. And Mr. Speaker, I would also like to ask, pursuant to Rule 13.3A, I would like to call for the recording of the ayes and no votes after the finishing of this amendment when we take the vote.
That motion is in order. Please proceed, Representative Warren.
Mr. Speaker, thank you. Members of the floor, I would like to discuss this amendment briefly. It seems like many times we will make decisions, certainly in my work I see this a lot, we make decisions based on, I call it emotion-based decisions, where something feels right. And yesterday, when the food service funding amendment came up to delete the funding, there was quite a bit of emotional response, which was all valid about, well, this is a parent's responsibility. How much money is this going to cost? There's plenty of money in the education funding formula already. Do we really need to put this funding in there? And so that question came up, and we all voted, and we voted to support that amendment and delete that funding. And there was a quote I saw this morning that said that the best way to make your dreams come true is to wake up. And so I'm going to wake you all up for a few minutes, if I can. And waking you up is looking at this decision again, but maybe through a different lens, which would be the lens of data or information as opposed to emotion. Certainly emotion is part of making a decision, but I want to have you consider the amendment, which I'm bringing forward, which is to bring the $4.5 million back into the model to fund the food service programs. What this would do, this amendment, would be bring the funding back in for 1 year. That's all. This doesn't go into the budget. It's 1 year. This funding, this $4.5 million in the bill, would be matched by each school district. About 50% of their food service funding would come from this bill, and the other 50% would come from the school district's block grant. So that's the second piece to consider. Another piece, every school district in the state, or nearly every school district, minus maybe one or two, sometimes the numbers change a little bit, everyone is supplementing the funding they receive from the federal government for their food services. But what has happened is the funding that they have in their model or in their schools is not meeting the needs that have increased in the food service program. And I'm going to talk about those needs in just a minute. In this amendment also, we're putting back into the bill all of the requirements that the schools have to follow to get this funding. So although we took the funding out yesterday, we took out more than just the $4.5 million. We took out all the stuff that the schools have to do to get that funding, which involves a lot of accountability, which is the last part of this data here. This program, again, is only for 1 year, but during that year, it's going to be very monitored. And in the bill, you will see in the Section 601, the schools must conduct periodic program evaluations, reviewing the program quality, the performance as measured by quality review instruments provided by the department. Basically, I guess the real person would say what this means is this funding is not just going to go into the schools, go buy food for your kids, and it'll fall into the model in 2010, we'll forget about it. It is going to be monitored. It has to be monitored. It has to be applied for. The schools have to show what they're doing with it. They have to show their needs. Now, how did this come about in the first place? And again, well, we've seen so much increase in education. Sometimes it's hard to put this in perspective, but let's put all the other stuff aside and just look at the food service program. What happened in November of 2005 in the recalibration report, it was assumed that the food service programs would break even. They're supposed to be self-funded. And you all may find on your desk something that's a memorandum that shows some of the background data about the food service program. I'm going to take a few little pieces from that, but this has much more information than I want to take for spending time up here today to share, but it'll give you some background. So in 2005, the assumption was there's enough funding. Well, in fact, they found out, the school district reported, there's not enough funding. So then, as we do with our wisdom here, we required that a study be done. And this study, which was reported back in a final report, was reported back in November of 2007. And from all the findings that they came together with in this study, they found there's a deficit of approximately $5 million, which is what this bill or this amendment, if brought back in, would fund. Where did the deficit come from? It comes from very many places. Some food is more expensive. If any of you have gone to the grocery store, you might have noticed that. Secondly, we are monitoring the quality of food much more than we used to. I don't know. I remember in grade school, I wasn't sure sometimes if it was food I was eating or whatever, but things have gotten better today. But to get better, you pay more. You get what you pay for. You really do. And so we're not depending on big commodities as much. We're not depending on mass production as much. We're serving higher quality food. It's more expensive if we're going to do that. Another decision made, and there were a number of decisions, but these are the primary ones that increased the cost, was to offer wages and benefits to the individuals working in the food service work in the schools. And I would ask all of you to go into the cafeterias and go in and meet the people that are cooking these meals for your kids and decide whether or not you believe they deserve decent wages and benefits. If you do, that's going to cost a little more. All that together built into the cost of increasing the food service program, which in the past was kind of something in the background. Now it is something in the foreground. So all of this together, this study, recommendations were brought forward by, again, this same group with whom we consulted, basically saying, and they came up with a formula of how this funding would be allocated. And the formula is rather complex, and it's somewhat identified in this part of the bill. You can read through it. It has aspects in there about the match, about a percentage that the schools must pay back, and that this funding is not for free lunches. There are a variety of things, but basically in it, it's saying this deficit is there, and we need to support the schools in them requiring support that they also must report back and how they utilize this funding. And then in a year, we will look at their reports, at the accountability, at the funding, and make a decision. Do we continue to fund? Do we look at other ways to save costs? Do we build this into the recalibration model in 2010? There are a lot of different ways of looking at this. The feedback that I've have received from the schools has indicated, and you may hear the argument, well, there's plenty of money in the education budget. The problem is that money is not intended for food service. It's intended for teaching, for the other needs in the schools. Food service is a separate requirement, a separate area of need in the schools, and we need to protect that funding for right now and then decide how do we want to fit it in with the whole model. So my request from all of you would be to consider supporting this amendment, put the $4.5 million back into the bill. The committee supported it. The education community supports it. Certainly I could talk on the emotional level of feeding kids and how they need to be able to eat to learn, but that's not the issue. This was a decision based on, in some ways, the economy of scale. It's more expensive than it was in the past to meet the nutritional needs in our school. So I'd ask you to put this back in and then hold the schools, hold the education department, hold our systems accountable for what they do with this money. Thank you.
Representative Teeters.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Rising on and against the amendment, I guess I fail to see the argument that these programs should not be self-funded. The issue with school lunches in the state of Wyoming is that we have about a 25% participation rate in high school. And it has nothing to do with cost. It has to do with quality. I don't think we should subsidize bad management. There's a school district that I spoke with in the northwestern part of the state of Wyoming that has their program in place that actually makes the school money. It's possible to have a quality program, and it's possible to do it by raising your fees, possibly if that's what's necessary. The program is federally subsidized. If there is a need to subsidize these programs, and many of the districts are, the money is available in the model. And the fact is that if they do need to subsidize it, they don't need any money, extra money to do that, because they're making that work today. So either we're overfunding the model, or the model dollars are being used where they're needed. And I would say that the model dollars are being used where they're needed. So I would ask you to vote no. This is a policy decision that this body is going to have to make, and I don't think we want to go down this road, because down the road it's going to cost more than $5 million a year, I'll guarantee you.
Representative Jorgensen.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Rising against this amendment number 2 to Senate File 70, I'm glad to hear this is going to be a data-driven discussion, because we don't have any data. We have a lot of information, and what it indicates, the conclusion you can draw from the information I've been told, is that they're all the districts do it differently. And if we're going to start another program where, though we're providing the money, we're not providing the constraints and the rules and the guidelines, we're not doing it equally, we're not doing it fairly. And that should be the bottom line of everything we do in school finance. That's why we were where we were on school finance. We're trying to get away from that. So if this is worthy, if the federal program and the existing state match, whatever that might be today, is not adequate, let's look at the situation. Let's develop uniform guidelines and rules for every district to follow, and have them come back in the next session. We're never cheap with schools. Doesn't matter if it's an interim or a supplemental budget or not. We do what is justified to do, and we will continue to do that. The reason this item is outside the model, I am told, is so that we will have some control over how it's spent. Everything in the model is automatic. If we can get some uniform rules and a good estimate next year of what we're really looking at, if anyone believes that we're going to do this for a year and then come back and maybe not continue it, that's really unrealistic. So let's work on the issue, get some data, come back in the supplemental budget and see what we're really talking about. When we were presented this information on Friday afternoon, late, in appropriations, we were given four or five items in this Senate File 70. I believe three of which were biennial and two were annual. It didn't indicate which was which. Now, we got the information. We were told which was which, but that's not the way to do this. Schools are really important, and for the last day of the last week of the session to be presented something like this that is not complete is not satisfactory. I urge you to oppose this amendment. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Harvey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I too like to work with real information, and so I ask my school districts, what if we don't supplement the school lunch program? Today, and I actually represent four school districts, and so I picked the medium one. Not the biggest, not the littlest. So economy of scale in my area, you're talking about middle of the road. Today they charge $1.75 per meal. And so families with one child pay about $315 a year for their child to have lunch at school. If this needs to become a self-sufficient program, costs will go to $3 per meal, $540 per year per child. In a county where the median income is $24,000, I think that's putting a huge burden on families. Talking with the chairman of the Board of Education in this district, she said that behavior problems have dropped and test scores have come up since they started the breakfast program. And the lunch program has been ongoing for years and years. But what I'm saying is this could be an extremely hard burden on families, and children are succeeding through the lunch and breakfast programs.
Representative Harshman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Ladies and gentlemen, the bringer of this amendment distributed the PICUS report. It's in your tray. It's a two-pager. It has her name on it. And I appreciate her bringing this to our attention. It's basically, if you read that short synopsis of the report and the study, there's really several reasons for deficits. And they assume that they'd be self-supporting. Part of the deficit problem is the fact that free meals were given out to adults and kids who shouldn't have received them, second meals, all those kind of things, management issues. I think they've taken care of that, taking it out of the $5 million deficit. There's another part where districts are paying their part of the food service operation that can be matched by the federal government. They're paying the state grant out of that, out of their block grant. I've got an amendment coming up that will allocate $500,000 so we directly, openly give that to the districts to so we can receive the federal match and leverage that match. I would say part of the discussion here that we've just heard, I think, alludes just to the problem. I don't have a list of which districts are running in the black or running in the red on these programs. I have no idea. So I don't know what management practices. I don't know any of that. And so I'm asking to vote on something, basically $4 million that will make up 90% of the deficits in some school districts. I don't know which school districts. I don't know. I haven't seen any of that. And so I guess I would ask for more data. And as you read the report, it's talking about basically 40 cents per meal deficit. So, you know, and I see it, and I think the good representative from Goshi's talked about 25% participation. I mean, they roar out of the parking lots to go spend $5 every day at lunch, as opposed to the $1.50 for a student lunch. And so I don't know where the cost, and I know there's a point of diminishing returns. Not every family and everything, we can't raise it too high where nobody shows up. But, gosh, I just don't think there's enough information to take a departure down this course. I don't know where it's going and who's getting it. So I'd urge you to resist this amendment and stay with the House position at this point. And down the road, there'll probably, maybe even conference, undoubtedly be some money go to this. But, gosh, I'd just hope we'd reject this on that. There's just no data to support it. So thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Kraft.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would like to speak in favor of this amendment. Mention has been made of the memorandum that was placed in your box. And if you look at that, you will see that preliminary data has already been collected. The State Department was directed to conduct an analysis of food service program costs. That report was generated just in November of this year, which is where the data that you have heard explained by the bringer of this amendment came from. The study that was conducted and reported on in November 13, 2007. And you can read the results of that in the memorandum that was distributed. I also checked with my school districts, and what I heard is that the budgeted subsidy for the current year, that one school district that is in my part of the state, exceeds $200,000. That's $200,000 that doesn't go to other educational programs, that goes to subsidize the food service. They also reported that from the June Professional Judgment Panel meeting, all but one school district in the state reported food service program deficits. There are a lot of reasons for it. There are a lot of remedies to consider, but I would suggest to you that these programs are indeed in need. Yes, they're in need of study, but they're in need of assistance right now, which was the result of the data-driven analysis that came previously, is that we need further study, but right now we need to look at what we can do to help these school districts, hence outside the model, hence 1 year only, hence pending further study. But let's not neglect our districts at this point in time in this one component. I agree, we fund our districts beautifully, but they are taking money from other programs to put into the food service program. This is just one district that's operating at a $200,000 a year deficit in the food service category. So I would just submit that information for your consideration and urge your approval. Thank you.
Representative Throne.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I guess over a number of years, and I haven't been on the Education Committee, so I'm not sure how many, you know, we have relied on the expertise provided by our consultants, Mr. Pikus et al., and they've provided this body with some very good recommendations that have gotten our school funding model back in order, helped end litigation, et cetera. And their recommendation is pretty specific. If we don't spend this money on food services, it's got to come from somewhere. And then we will be taking money away from the cost of education, which is in the model, to fund food services. And that doesn't make sense. But in response to the good representative from Natrona County, I'd also add that there's a lot of depth and detail in this bill. We're not just writing checks to the school district. There are checks and balances in this bill. In order to qualify for the money, the district has got to persuade the Department of Education that they have a deficit that meets the requirements in here, that they have a program that meets the requirements, and only then will they get any of this money. It's not a blank check to the school districts. And I also asked for information from my school district and learned that in 1991, the budgeted cost of health care for food service workers was $100,000. This year, the budgeted cost for health care is $700,000. That's a huge cost increase for the food service workers between 1991 and 2008. Well, perhaps that's a cause of the deficit, rising costs of health care. Food service workers, you know, require health care and benefits like everyone else. Those costs are going up. And in addition, we've encouraged our school districts to offer healthier foods, more fruits and vegetables, health bars, whole grain buns, etc. Well, all of that costs more. So hence the need for funding to help the districts and the deficits. And if I can throw a little emotion in here and be slightly silly, although my son came home from school quite excited yesterday because he got to help pass out the food. And for passing out, for being the assistant server in the lunchroom yesterday, he was paid 3 extra chicken nuggets and an extra scoop of mashed potatoes. So perhaps that's a way we can think about saving money if we'd like, but probably not highly recommended. Thank you.
Representative Wallace.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. On and against this amendment, with all due respect to my colleagues and at the risk of being abused for using an old cliche, I'd like to remind the body that there is no free lunch. And I'd also like to say that in this area, this is a matter of personal and parental responsibility. We already have federal programs that we may need to look at if there's something we need to do there to make sure that kids from low-income families or disadvantaged families have a good, decent meal at school. But I, would dare to speculate, a good number of you in this body never ate a school-provided meal in my entire elementary career. I brought a lunch from home every single day on special occasions, and a few years, moms and dads got organized, and they would come in and bring us a hot meal once in a while. But that was something that the parents and the community did. And so it's entirely possible, and I think our responsibility, to feed our kids.
Representative Gilmore.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Rising in support of this well-thought-out amendment, and also thanks to the bringer. We all want to focus and have some control over the education budget, but I just can't at the expense of a child that is hungry but isn't entitled. They need the fuel to learn. Or a parent that possibly sits through a lunch hour and gets a free lunch. Or maybe a teacher, you know, that gets a free lunch. I just don't want to have to worry about these things, and they aren't a great concern, and I don't think they're going to mean a hill of beans in the scheme of things. Well, anyway, I guess I've said all I have to say, but I do urge you to vote for this amendment.
Representative Davison.
Thank you. I, too, took my lunch to school all 6 to 8 years. And I absolutely hated those soggy sandwiches. Folks, this isn't a new program. This is, parts of it may be new, but we've been feeding kids for a long time in school. And I think we need to realize that 50% of the district's food service funding will come from this bill, but 50% is going to come from the school's block grant. I understand the philosophy that parents should be taking care of their kids and feeding them and clothing them and doing all the things that they're supposed to. But I also understand that there are a lot of parents out there that don't do this. They don't provide the basic needs for these children. And when these children get to school, they're hungry, and some of them are even dirty. And these people take care of them, and they make sure that they have a full tummy so they can learn better. I just think that when a parent doesn't do it, as our society's showing, it becomes the responsibility of this society to take care of those children and do the best for them and help them get the best that they can give. And I'm honored for this amendment. Thank you.
Representative Gingrey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a question for the bringer, and I'm just to make sure I'm following this enough. There seems to be these deficits, and there's been some complaints that we don't actually have the data as to who has the deficits and who does have the deficits. What I'm curious about, it seems like there's two options here, and I just want to make sure I'm understanding this correctly. The one option to get rid of the deficit, this particular school district could raise their prices, and that would get rid of their deficit. But I thought the good representative Casper made a good point. There's a point of diminishing return as you keep going up. The second option is for us to subsidize that through this, because one of my concerns is if they have to pick one of those two, because if we don't do it, it sounds as though they're going to have to provide the food service. That money is going to have to come out of their block grant, so I assume other programs would not be funded since they got to provide it one way or the other. My other concern is exactly what the last speaker was just talking about. My wife teaches kindergarten, and quite a few of the kids show up without having eaten a breakfast at all, and they don't have lunch, what my wife refers to as the, well, my name, endowment fund. She writes quite a few checks where our family ends up paying for all this stuff. She tries to sneak those past me, but I think a lot of teachers actually end up having to do that because you just can't have a kid in your classroom that's hungry. And especially at the beginning of the school year before they can get all their free lunch, paperwork filled out and with kindergartens, you know, snack time, you know, it sounds to us like nothing, but to a kindergartner, snack time is extremely important to keep their energy levels up. And most of the kids, a lot of the kids in our class, their parents just can't afford to bring snacks. Quite a few families in her classroom that are low income, that are workers from out of the country. They're here legally, by the way. Let me make that clear. They're here legally. This appears to be a good idea to fund this food service, because it seems like there's only two options, and raising the price may not be the right way to go.
Representative Floyd Esquibel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Speaking in favor of this amendment, it's been mentioned that feeding the children is the parents' responsibility, and that's that goes without saying. We all know that, but unfortunately, as it stands right now, there are many single parent families in our society, and what caused that to happen, I can't say, but there are a lot of single parent families. A lot of single women that are raising one, two, three children, working minimum wage jobs, and the jobs many times conflict with the school schedule. I don't know about the rest of you, but I have a hard time getting myself going, much less, I don't know what I'd do if I had three kids or two kids or even one kid to get ready to go to school. It's pretty difficult. You feed them what you can, and you go to work and hope the car starts. And if it wasn't for the school, I'm sure many children, even though they might have something to eat in the morning, I'm sure that the food is less than adequate. I know in my case, on several occasions, I received some child abuse complaints against some parents because they weren't feeding them a nice hot bowl of cereal, orange juice, fruit, and things of that nature. After checking the situation out, there wasn't any abuse. It was maybe an economic situation, that type of thing. I think most parents try to do the best they can, but for whatever reason, there are a lot of single-parent families. And I think we're moving into a situation where it's even going to be a little bit more difficult, where many families that have families that have children in the school are taking care of the children, and they're also taking care of their parents. That's just the way it is. So I urge you to support this amendment. Thank you.
Representative Dockstader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I had a chance to kind of sleep on this one overnight, and I'm kind of surprising myself where I'm coming from on it. After a night's sleep, come back, look at it again, and think perhaps we need to look at this a little closer, give it another year, keep the funding in place. That's what we have an education committee for, to come back and make sure that there's accountability, and not be too quick to rush and pull the funding from something that does well for our children at this point. So I would be in favor of the amendment at this time.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker Pro Tem. I have a question, and I assume that the food service program includes all the cost of the food
and the wages for the food service workers. And based on that assumption, the report indicates that diseconomies of scale and higher wages cost approximately $4 million in the current school year. So that's really four-fifths of the deficit. And it doesn't break it out between diseconomies of scale and higher wages, but it does say that the wages are substantially above average in other states. So when we build the system, we build in higher wages, or was it when we instituted the food service supplement that the wages were raised, and then now we're looking at a deficit? I don't quite understand how those wages have impacted the deficit. And if that's a school district issue where they set the wage for those and elect to go substantially over the average, then they dig into their block grant to fund those and now come back to us for reimbursement of that on those district choices. So I'm a little fuzzy about that, and would like to hear some comment on that.
Chairman Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess I've got a short memory as well, but I had at least some of the school boards lobby me about groundskeepers, where I think it's about $8 million overfunded in the model. Let's wait for the model to correct that, and let's leave that overfunding there. But now all of a sudden we have short funding on the food, so we got to come up with more money. I think we're talking out of both sides of our mouth on this thing. If they have an overfunding on the groundskeepers, let's let that go. Let's keep overfunding that until we redo the model. But now we've got underfunding on the food. Let's put some more money in it right now and not wait for to redo the model.
Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker Pro Tem. I have a question, too, I guess maybe for all of us, but the sponsor. You know, we now are approaching $1.2 billion a year with a $1.2 billion budget. Or once we factor in the cost of capital construction, the highest expense per student K through 12 in America, more than likely on the planet. I'm having trouble with that amount that's known as enough. At some point, enough has to find a level. You know, I urge you to consider how we have treated our K through 12 educational system in this state. The Wyoming Supreme Court says you have done a great job. What got missed? How could we have gone so wrong? The consultant provided us with a model that was generous, I think, to a fault. Consultants do that. We have the results of that work, and we now live with it. And there aren't many complaints, but yet I see that maybe there are some complaints, that maybe we missed a nook or a cranny or maybe the possibility of it. We really had better figure out a way to mine more coal, pump more oil and gas, start talking about property tax increases instead of relief. I'm opposed to this amendment, Mr. Speaker Pro Tem.
Anyone else for your first time? By my count, 44 of you have not spoken on this. Anybody for their second time before the bringer of the motion? Representative Harshman for your second time.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Pro Tem, I'm reluctant to speak again on this, but, I heard a lot of anecdotal stuff about poor kids and dirty kids and hungry kids, and we have a lot of kids, you know. When I first became a teacher, I realized kids didn't come to school with clean clothes and breakfast. It was a shock because I did, not everybody I knew did. And we have homeless kids. We have kids living in unbelievable circumstances and somehow trying to come to school every day. And we're working our tails off to deal with those kids because they have to meet adequate yearly progress and that we're trying to meet their basic needs. But this amendment has nothing to do with that. And so I want to bring this back to really the issue. Our school food services are running a deficit. Why is that? Well, some of it's because of free meals and extra meals. They figure about half a million. And then $4 million statewide to our districts are running deficits. Well, some aren't running deficits. Why is that? I don't know. I don't know. I don't know where the money will go. I don't know what districts are running the biggest deficits. I have no idea. And so we talked about options, you know. there were a good speaker from Teton talked about two options. Well, the third option would obviously be closed campuses. Then you got all your customers or they're right there on campus and they all have to eat, and that would probably take care of the issue. We're talking about 40 cents per meal. So whether we're going to, I guess I just would urge us to be careful with this until we know a little more about it. And then just a sidebar comment on school funding. Finally, after two decades of really neglect, because we were so doggone poor we couldn't do anything, we're finally funding our schools the way we should. And it's paying off. Our kids are doing a great job. Our teachers are doing a great job. Let's be proud of that. And you can see the growth in state government, the charts I gave you all. Schools is kind of the least of our problem in percentage of growth. And but we've really done amazing things, and we'll be proud of that. And that's what's going to put this state way out in the forefront. And so I don't want this to become a debate about school finance. We've done a great job. And but this is something different that we have not done. And I'm not so sure right now we're ready to take that jump. And so I urge you to defeat this amendment. Thank you, Mr. Speaker Pro Tem.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I have another question, and it, you know, when we started this bill yesterday, we had the amendments that simply went right in and stripped money without explaining what the sections of the bill did, really. And I wonder, in Section 6, food service, if we took out the appropriation and passed the language as it is that would require the reporting that the report actually talks about, I think that might be a good thing. And I don't know that it's dependent on funding. I don't think it is the way I've read it, and I'd have to read it again closely to really understand that. But why not pass it and take the money out so we have the procedures in place to track what we're floundering around with right now?
Further discussion prior to the sponsor of the amendment. Representative Warren.
Mr. Speaker, there were many questions. I'm going to try to answer some of them and perhaps even consider the idea of dividing the amendment in two and the funding being separate from the food service protocol. One comment was made is that maybe in some school districts we have some less than competent management, bad management. They're not spending their money well. They're not hiring well. Other ones, we have good management. Some we have where they're actually paying for what the costs are. This is supposed to be a cost-based system. And that comment, I think, is accurate. There's not consistency across the state. And one aspect of this part of the bill, in this first part, separate from the funding, is to address those inconsistencies. And as we might have done yesterday, as we eliminated the funding, but with that, we also eliminated the whole protocol to have the oversight of the food management program. So I would just call your attention briefly to the bill. When you look on the Section 601 and you read down through on, really it gets to about page 39, where it looks at the schools will have compliance with federal, state, district regulations. The page before on the bottom of page 38, they'll obtain department approval of the strategic plan for food services operation, including operating guidelines, standards for food safety, required food service training, food production procedures, supervisory structure, benchmarks, and so on. Periodic program evaluations, line 9, page 39. Financial management policies, line 13. Provide a meal counting system, and so on. So a big part of this amendment is also this accountability, which I think is important. And so the bad management problem could be addressed perhaps through this section of the amendment. And there is no question there could be some places better managed than others. Maybe we'll find the most amazingly managed program in one particular district, and that will be the protocol. And maybe that protocol will mean in a year we're not going to put any more funding into this, into the food service program, because they found a way to be self-sufficient. You've all probably seen creative programs where things like that are done, that they're able to function outside of the standard operational procedures. But for a year, to keep the funding in, this is an interim study. We as a legislature requested a study. We had the study done. They came back with the results. They were thinking this would be self-sufficient. It wasn't. this is the deficit they came up with, so this is the suggestion they came up with for 1 year. In a year, this legislature may decide no more funding. And to hear the amount of funding, which is rather overwhelming, certainly sitting on JAC, seeing a lot of funding in a lot of places, the analogy that came to my mind is kind of like standing at the bottom of Mount Everest and looking up. And so we got to take care of that. We can't have such a big mountain. But there's one little path, and that's the path of the food service program that I would like you to consider. Another comment was made about the stress of families, single parents, two or three kids, and so on. I would present to you that families with two parents at home, both parents working, since World War II, unfortunately or fortunately, what happened is kids started being taken care of more by schools, and parents, moms, families went to work, for better or for worse. Because of that, we've seen more responsibility put on schools for the management and care of kids. That includes food service. It also includes other aspects of their lives, as you would see in just the overall educational funding. But one part of this idea of the food service is so important, no matter what your home situation is, to know when your child goes to school, they will have a well-prepared nutritional meal and know that they can depend on that is important. There are many families of all income levels that will say, I don't want you to have $3 a meal. That's too expensive, so make your lunch, but I don't have time to make a lunch. The kids won't make a lunch. The kids will go to school. They won't have it. Now, again, this bill is not necessarily about what families do. It's about what schools do. We can't control what families do. We can't control that the young person will go after school to buy a $5 hamburger at McDonald's. That's between the kid and his parents and finances. But what we can control is that we fund schools in a way that they can provide nutritional services and needs for the kids. There was a comment made about, is this really data-driven? And I would say if to actually measure outcomes, sometimes in education is difficult. We try to do data, but sometimes a child may not read well, but they're phenomenal in art. Or they may not do real well in the traditional mathematics arena, but they are absolute geniuses in the mathematical arena. How do we measure outcomes? That's hard. That's a challenge. That's an art. Food is very measurable. We can measure how much it costs to get the food in, to cook it, how much does it cost to pay for the people preparing it, what does the food look like. It's a very manageable and measurable part of our educational system. So I would say if it's data-driven, certainly the report I gave you shows that, and I think the eventual outcome is one that this is probably one of the most data-driven, accountable processes in our schools that we have. And I was thinking one other aspect, too. You all watch the up and down of our economy. And what's going on? We've got gasoline prices. We've got heating prices. We've got a lot of stressors on American families. Where do they take that out? They'll take it out maybe in managing their budgets in ways that maybe we would wish they wouldn't. But one thing that we can do in the school systems is have something that's constant, and that's taking care of the nutritional needs of our kids. Even with the economy being such a variable, this can be a constant. I'm not sure that I think the last comment I would say when we look at there's no such thing as a free lunch, and I would say that's true. Certainly on JAC, nothing's free. I don't know if there is anything that's free. But I would say, although it's going to cost us for a year in this interim time period to fund this, what is going to be the cost of not funding it? And I think there was a reference made to how much better kids are doing when they have breakfast. When we know that that's there for 1 year, we don't have to worry about that. But the cost of not funding this is far greater, I believe, than the cost that we will have of funding it. So I encourage your support for this amendment. Come back in a year and make sure we scrutinize this and consider that this is a good investment for our kids and for our future. Thank you.
The motion is to adopt second reading amendment number 2 to Senate File 70 pursuant to House Rule 13-3A. A roll call vote has been moved and properly seconded. A majority of the quorum is required to pass the amendment. Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Alden. Alden. Anderson. Bagby. Berger. Blake. Brechtel. Brown. Buchanan. Childers. Kraft. Davison. Dirks. Dockstetter. Edmonds. Edwards. Esquivel F. Esquivel K. Gilmore. Gingery. Goggles.
Hales.
Aye.
Hallinan.
No.
Hammonds.
Aye.
Harshman.
No.
Harvey.
Aye.
Eichel.
Aye.
Illaway.
Aye.
Yagi.
Aye.
Jones.
No.
Jorgensen.
No.
Landon.
No.
Lockhart.
No.
Lubnow.
Aye.
Madden.
Aye.
Martin.
Aye.
McComey.
Aye.
Mercer.
No.
Meyer.
Aye.
Miller. Millen.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Peterson.
No.
Philp.
No.
Korberg.
No.
Samuelson.
No.
Simlick.
No.
Shepperson.
Aye.
Simpson.
Aye.
Slater.
Aye.
Stewart.
Aye.
Stubson.
No.
Teeters.
No.
Thompson.
Aye.
Throne.
Aye.
Wallace.
No.
Warren.
Aye.
White.
No.
Zwanitzer Dan.
Aye.
Zwanitzer Dave. Mr. Speaker.
No.
Alden.
Aye.
I'm about to close the vote. Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 35 ayes, 25 noes.
Second reading amendment number 2 to Senate File 70 has been adopted. We are now on Representative Goggles.
Mr. Speaker.
Representative Goggles and Representative White.
Mr. Speaker, as member of the 59th, privilege of the floor, please.
Please proceed.
Members of the 59th, we have a group here from Laramie. It's the Cathedral Home for Children, and it's the Native American program, and Representative Goggles is going to take it from here.
Representative Goggles.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Members, it's my pleasure to introduce this group of students to you. These are the students that were, many times the reasons we're here. And that these are the ones who want to make a difference in their lives. That's the reason I'm here. I'd like these students to stand when I introduce them. Brody Burnett, Daniel Washington, Charlie White, Kristen Antelope, Jenny Armejo, Stacy Titsa, Stephanie Hanaway, their chaperones, Wendy Perez, Sherry LeBeau. Last but not least, this little guy I, my wife, and sister-in-law took from the hospital and raised. My son, Henry Quiver.
We are back on second reading amendment number 3 to Senate File 70. Representative Dirks.
Mr. Speaker, I move second reading amendment number 3 to Senate File 70. This doesn't have the gravity of many of the amendments to come before and after it, but it does attempt to add some flexibility to the summer school programs by allowing or other remedial methods to be used in the summer school that is so clearly based on remediation and intervention, and I would urge passage. Thank you.
Representative Wallace.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I rise in opposition to this amendment, and what I'd like to do is, I know many of you have not been involved with the summer school and extended day program, which is outside of the model. And I have, and I think that there are some definitions that are really important when you're considering this. And by inserting the words "or other remedial methods," what my fear is that it's going to discourage the very strategies in summer school and extended day programs that have shown to be highly successful, and it's going to allow a loophole so that teachers and schools can fall back on the same old strategies that have proven to not work with these particular kids. We're talking about at-risk kids. And if we do things the same old way, we're going to get the same old results. So please don't allow that to be watered down. Let me give you a couple of definitions that I think are really important. One of them is the definition of enrichment, how we're using the word enrichment. Enrichment means a learning opportunity, engaging students in rigorous, higher-order thinking through pragmatic and or real-world application. It incorporates learning through manipulative, hands-on experience relevant to a student's learning style. Enrichment activities should be provided in conjunction with the regularly scheduled school day, whether during summer school or during extended day programs operated throughout the traditional school year. And the other definition that I think is really important is independent enrichment program. What is that? Means an activity or program not specifically embedded in a district summer school or extended day program for students needing supplemental instruction. Those opportunities stand alone and can target various student populations and or content areas beyond mathematics or reading and language arts. Independent enrichment programs are to be added to the traditional school day, whether in summer school or during the traditional school year. So what happens if you water that down, if you say you can use other remedial strategies? One of the things that this program does, which I wholeheartedly believe in, is it is a mandate to do differently. If a kid is not succeeding with the regular classroom and not achieving where they need to be, this program says, you've got to do something different. You've got to figure out a different way to reach this kid. And by allowing this loophole, I think we're losing that mandate to do differently. So I would encourage you to vote against this. Thank you.
Representative Kraft.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would also speak in opposition to this amendment. The good representative from District 52 and myself have the privilege of being on the summer school design team. We see the applications that come in for summer school programs. And I can assure you that these are full of enriched activities. I would suggest to you that this amendment actually seeks to, possibly unintentionally, but does seek to discourage enriched instructional strategies for at-risk students. These are academically at-risk students. It allows teachers to fall back on some of those old methods that they maybe tried during the school year and they didn't work then, so they're possibly not going to work again during the summer session. They ask for enriched programs, enriched strategies. The word remedial is used, but it is used with the idea of enrichment remediation. Remediation in terms of you didn't get the subject matter during the school year, we're going to give it to you in a different way. Hopefully a more innovative, a more creative way than we did during the school year. Another thing this amendment would do is it would remove the ongoing training requirement. Now, teachers already have that through the Professional Teaching Standards Board, but this discourages moving forward with that, doing things differently, looking for new strategies. I would urge your defeat of this amendment. Thank you.
Representative McComey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I'd like to divide the amendment. I'd like to divide the amendment and make amendment number one, lines 7 through 9, and the rest of it, number 2.
That is in order. Please proceed, Representative McComey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I'd like to speak to the First Division. Mr. Speaker, I too am concerned that it strikes the program, the required program instructors to receive the training. I think that's important. And I'd like to see us vote against this First Division. Because I do think that is important. And with that,
Further discussion as to Division 1. You are now, the motion is to adopt Division 1 to second reading amendment number 3 to Senate File 70. That is on your amendment, lines 8 and 9, dealing with the bill, page 4, lines 13 through 17. All those in favor of Division 1, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed to Division 1, please signify by saying no.
No.
Division 1 to second reading amendment number 3 to Senate File 70 has failed. We are on Division 2. Representative McComey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Speaker, I'm sorry, point of order. The sponsor of the amendment didn't have the opportunity to respond on that division.
The vote is rescinded. Representative Dirks.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Floor Leader. And this part of the amendment is... It is about a somewhat of a different thing, but what we're saying here is that one could teach 20, 25, 30 years, and yet you still can't teach summer school unless you've had this very special training. Now, what we're getting here is a sentiment that something new under the sun is best. What we've heard from a previous speaker is that only new things in education are good. And that is where I will draw the line. I think there is wisdom in the ages. I think there is wisdom in the great works of the great thinkers of all time. And to stand up and say that only new things in education are going to go, that's a road I don't think we want to go down. Now, as far as this amendment, if you vote for it, you can say that summer school, in order to teach summer school, you have to have special training. No matter how long you've taught, no matter what you've done, only the special training from the State Department will work. That's what this is about.
Mr. Speaker, a point of order again. I think that the division, and this would be Division 1, I believe, was called as Line 7 through 9. It should be Line 7 through 10. Because line 10 is just a renumbering if you delete the subparagraph that line 8 references.
That is correct. Thank you, Mr. Majority Floor Leader. Further discussion? Representative Wallace.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. 2 points. Not every teacher has 25 or 30 years of experience. And the other point is this is a program that's targeted specifically at academically at-risk students, students who have not succeeded in the regular classroom. So it makes sense to me that the people who are teaching these programs would have training in ways, alternative ways, to reach these kids. Some of those alternative ways, I would hazard to guess, are based on the experience, the long-time experience of teachers. Still, I don't think it's unreasonable to say that a little extra training along the same lines of the continuing education that every teacher has to go through is not unreasonable.
Further discussion. Representative Dirks.
Mr. Speaker, some people are monitoring what I'm saying here. I'm saying we want to vote for this. We want to vote for this aspect of the amendment and against the education chair's motion.
You are once again voting on Division 1 to second reading amendment number 3 to Senate File 70. All of those in favor of Division 1, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All of those opposed to Division 1, signify by saying no.
No.
Division 1 to second reading amendment number 3 to Senate File 70 has failed. We are now on Division 2. Division being called. All those in favor of Division 1, please stand. Division 1 to second reading amendment number 3 to Senate File 70 has been adopted. We are now on Division 2. Representative McComey.
Well, that's startling, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the rest of this, I feel that is good language. I think that it gives some direction to the Department of Education that we can't be too rigid in dealing with some of these challenged students. And so I would speak in favor of the rest of the amendment.
Further discussion. Representative Dirks.
Mr. Speaker, thank you. I really didn't mean to cause all this commotion. But I do think it's important to realize that when you see the language using enriched learning strategies in the bill, that may as well have a registered trademark on it. That is a very specific way of teaching, a very specific curriculum. And there's nothing wrong with it. I'm not going to stand here and put down the new things, but I will resist it when I hear on this floor that old is bad. I will resist that, and I think we all should. What my amendment tries to do is to say either will work, because there is nothing new under the sun. There really isn't. There are many ways to approach things, and I would encourage passage of this.
We are now on Division 2 to second reading amendment number 3 to Senate File 70. All of those in favor of Division 2 signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All of those opposed to Division 2 signify by saying no. Division number 2 to second reading amendment number 3 to Senate File 70 has been adopted. We are now on second reading amendment number 4, Representative Harshman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Ladies and gentlemen, this is really isn't too difficult an amendment. And I would urge you to get your, I have a handout. I think it's three pages. Came to your tray just before lunch. It's got a chart on the front. It's got my name on it. It says, why tutors? Well, appropriations, this is the use of educational resources in Wyoming. Report to the Wyoming Legislature, February 14th, 2008, by Auden and Pikus et al. Now, so we commissioned this study to see how our educational resources were being spent in the state of Wyoming. On the first page of my handout, if you have that in front of you, it talks about effect sizes, and I kind of put brackets around that, where the research field generally recognized an effect size greater than 0.25 as significant and greater than 0.50 as substantial. And you can see chart 4 there is the estimated effect sizes of major recommendations. Now, this is in our new recalibration model. And you can see full-day kindergarten, I have arrows pointing out three of these major recommendations. Full-day kindergarten, and you remember our debates on that, and, you know, job well done on that. It's going to make a huge impact. 0.77. The class sizes, particularly in grades K through 3, and I don't know what's going on around the state particularly, but I know in our district we're moving there, and it's over each year we gain a grade on that, and it's going to make a huge difference. The next arrow I have, though, is professional development with classroom instructional coaches. Now, we had that debate yesterday, and you can see the effect size, 1.25 to 2.70, very substantial. Okay, that's why we're funding it. And then tutoring, one-to-one tutoring, and this is with certified folks, 0.4 to 2.5. So then my question is, why tutors? And that's the heart of this amendment, which would pull the tutor funding out of the block grant. See, because once it goes in the block grant, districts have that, you know, that local control where they can spend it on anything they'd like. So if they don't want to hire tutors, they don't have to. And you know, so most of the models that way. Now, if you would flip over the next page, these are some, I copied off some of the slides from this PICUS report to the Wyoming legislature on in February of 2008. And these are the key findings. I ran off some summaries for you and shrunk them down so they're on one page. You can see the elementary schools. There's more aides hired, fewer certified tutors. The middle schools, just below that, more aides, fewer tutors. The high schools, top right-hand corner, more aides, two-thirds fewer certified tutors. If you go down to the slide on the bottom left, I have it labeled as A, the number of tutors. And this is just in the sample schools. They didn't go through every school, but they took a sample. Tutors funded by the state model and sampled schools, 146 in the elementary. And if you move to the right, the actual teachers tutoring in those sampled schools was 95. And then aides tutoring in sampled schools was 89. Now, as you go down the next one line to the middle schools, 63 of them in the sample schools were funded. Less than half were actually employed. And then you can see the aides. And then it gets worse in high school. 62 should have been funded in the sampled schools. Only 17 were actually hired. Now, if you'll read under there, and I have two stars next to it in bold print, Pikus and Auden said, we found substantially fewer certified tutors to provide extra help to struggling students, especially in middle and high schools. And then in Exhibit B there, the number of instructional aides, it's hard to read that, but you can see the numbers in elementary, 907, 293 in middle school, and 243, and these are in the sample schools. Now, I drew an arrow to the bold language. The model does not fund instructional aides. It only funds certified tutors for our at-risk. It's based on an at-risk component. The number of identified at-risk students you have generates the funding for the tutors. I would tell you this is, I think, one of the more successful programs of the model. We figured out the deal, you know, with our PAWS tests where we were struggling early because our best kids were kind of bagging the test. They were going in and drawing Mickey Mouse and all this other stuff on the little circles and having a heyday with it because it didn't matter to them. Well, now in most of our schools, we've made it part of the grading process, perhaps in their English class or their math class. We haven't made it, of course, you know, a requirement for graduation, but we've put some teeth into it, into their courses. And so that's really, and then we provide an incentive. So if kids get proficient on it, they're done. They don't have to take it every year. And so we've told kids that, by and large. So we've solved that problem. And that was part of the early trouble. Our best kids were bagging the tests. It made our general scores go down. But the other part of this equation is our struggling at-risk kids. And they need this help. And that's what these tutors are designed for, to pull them out, give them more time in math, more time in English and writing. So what this amendment does, well, let me just flip one more page so you can see the numbers. You can see your school district. Now, this is $23 million out of a $1.3 billion budget. So it's not like it's, you know, not like the lights are going to go out one way or the other. But you can see what the model generates for your school district. I have no idea what your school district is doing, whether they're putting that on a one-to-one thing, hiring the tutors they're supposed to hire, that they've been given the money, and so on. My thought is this. Here's one of the most substantial effect sizes in the model with tutors. Why not pull it out of the model, just like we do with instructional facilitators in summer school, to make sure, okay, school district, if you are going to actually do this, then apply to the Department of Ed, get the money, get your same money that you would under the model. It's not pro rata or anything else. It's fully funded, and then hire your tutors. But it doesn't go to something else. It doesn't go, because this is so important, I believe. That's why I'm here. I'm not here just picking fights. I'm not trying to lose my endorsement from my union. I'm not trying to do that. I'm trying to do what I think is the right thing on this, because I'm in on the ground floor on this deal. And Miss, the good representative from Lusk and myself, I guess, are And so I think this is the right thing to do. We've said this is important. This is an important part of the funding model to make an effect on these kids who need it. And I would like to see that these resources are directed in that way. And the way we do it is pull it out of the model. Gosh, I think it's about as simple as that. I don't know. And it's really just a policy call. And I guess I'd stand for questions, Mr. Speaker.
Representative McComey.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, there are many of us that like to see parts of the model, many of these components taken out of the model. And when we do that, of course, as the good gentleman has indicated, we're getting into the local control issue. My problem with this particular piece of legislation is that we're being brought, one person is being brought, bringing this on the floor at this time. We have not heard from the schools. We have not heard from the administrators. We have not heard from anybody about this. If we're going to do this, we should probably be looking at doing this when we recalibrate so that we can get the testimony from these people in the schools and the people that deal with this every day and find out why they're doing what they're doing. They may have some perfectly legitimate arguments, but they don't have the ability to come down here on the floor, and they certainly don't have, this doesn't have a chance to go back for public comment. So while I think that this has merit, I don't think this is the proper time or the proper place to do it, and I'd urge your defeat of this amendment.
Representative Teeters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, or Mr. Speaker. Rising on and in favor of the amendment, and I appreciate the bringer of the amendment. This has been a concern of mine as we've gone through the interim and looked at tutors and the way the resources are being allocated. Right now, basically, we are funding an enormous amount of tutors, and they're not hiring them. All this amendment does is it requires that we pay for what we get. I think that's reasonable. If they are not going to hire the tutors and they're not going to utilize the resource as we expect them to in the model, let's pull it out and let's pay for what it's actually costing. I appreciate the amendment, and I would ask for your support.
Further discussion prior to the sponsor. Representative Hammonds.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. There are many of you that could take any part of the model and say, let's pull it all out so we know exactly what they're spending everything on. And so you can take any part. Are they really having the limited amount of students in the classroom? Are they really only having so many administrators? Do they, you know, all of the parts of it. I think that there's some real good questions here. Tutors as certified teachers is a new concept in Wyoming. There are two main problems with the amendment as it's been brought forward. The first is, and I would ask that you read along with me, it's the dates that are in it. It's problematic. So as you look at the amendment, if you look at line 22, April 15th, 2008, that's when your school districts have to put in their application for this money. Now go down to lines 28, 29, and 30. When they put in their application in little Romanet I, they have to say, or one, they say, evidence of employment of certified teachers as tutors at the school level for provision of one-on-one student instruction. So by April 15th, they've got to already have their certified teachers hired. Now you tell me how our school districts are going to do that. And then the next problem is you get down to line 40, and you see the date May 1st, 2008. The Department of Education has 15 days to evaluate all of these applications from all of the school districts to decide whether or not they should get the funding. So they can tell them by May 1st, this is the funding you'll get, so those people can go on your payroll and you'll be able to pay them. This is problematic. I cannot conceive of how the school districts in our state can deal with this $22 million decision in that length of time. Where are these teachers that they're necessarily going to hire? So that's problem number one. Problem number two, and I visited with the consultants at length about the issue of tutors over the years when they were first hired, and then this again just, a couple weeks ago when they were here. Wyoming has a unique situation in terms of our paraprofessionals that are in the classroom. They're trying to create a new profession. They call themselves paraprofessionals. They're the aides in our schools. Because of No Child Left Behind requirements, they now need AA degrees. They also are taking all of the in-services. Many of them have worked for your school districts for any number of years. They've taken every in-service that your certified teachers have. And so many of them have been teaching direct instruction with some of these students over time. And when I've asked the consultants, are there other states with this model? Do we have research based on what these individuals do? And they said no. Aides in other states are different than the aides that are paraprofessionals in Wyoming. And so I believe that the issue that's been raised by this is a good one. I think it really should be an interim topic, but I don't think that this solves it. I think it would really create a very, very difficult situation for our school districts to react this quickly in terms of hiring people and letting a lot of people go, quite frankly, that have worked for our school districts. And for that reason, I stand opposed to the amendment as proposed.
Representative Hallinan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I have a confession to make. I don't know the details of the model. I'm sure all the rest of you do. I would say that I have a lot of confidence in the maker of this amendment, but I have a lot more confidence in a bill that comes out of a committee after it's been discussed, with all of its ramifications being reviewed by all the people in the field. I speak on and against the amendment. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Korberg.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. You know, at first thought, this probably seemed like a pretty good idea, and at a minimum, perhaps to have the discussion about it today. But the more I think about it and the more I look back on where we have come and all that we went through to get to this point with the funding formula and recalibration, I'm going to urge the body to vote against this amendment today. We have always handed our money down through the block grant formula, and we had many, many discussions when we went through recalibration as to whether or not we were going to allow the school districts to maintain their autonomy and local control by continuing to block grant their funding down to them. And that was a conscious decision that we made by this body, and I do believe it was the right decision. And I guess I can harken back to an amendment that I brought on the budget bill about wanting accountability, and we certainly all here on the floor have the opportunity, and I know that our school districts would be more than willing to share with us their information on how they distribute the block grant and whether or not they hire tutors. So I would just urge the body to vote against this amendment, and I would also urge you, when you go home, to get with your school districts one-on-one and to find out how their money is really spent, and this is a discussion that is better left for another day. But I encourage the body to vote against this amendment.
Representative Gilmore.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I urge you to vote for this amendment. Call me old-fashioned, if you will, as we heard a previous speaker. The word tutor, I understand that. I don't especially understand paraprofessional. I always get this wrong. The instructors of the facilitators, okay. Those kind of words throw me. I do know, having children and grandchildren in the school system presently, that early on, I had some grandchildren tutored, and it was very effective. It brought them up to the grade level they were supposed to be. It corrected the problem that they had in their area of lacking. So I urge you to vote for this amendment.
Representative Dockstetter.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. You know, if this eight-page amendment serves as perhaps some type of a starting point to go back and reassess our tutor program, then great. But I don't think any of you, or at least many of you, really haven't had an opportunity to discuss this one with your educators on the front line. Take it back home, discuss it with them, and then come back and take it through the Education Committee and give it some serious consideration at this point. So against the amendment.
Further discussion prior to the sponsor. Representative Harshman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'll try to answer those questions that were brought up. The first question was brought up by the good representative from Washakie on the language referring to the amendment, that how in the world by April 15th and then how in the world by May 1st. Well, I would tell you that that's just boilerplate language that we use in all of our education grants like this. If you'll actually look in the bill on page 21, talking about instructional facilitators, it's the exact same language. By April 15th of the school year, they talk about their instructional facilitators, and then the department shall notify each district by May 1st whether they have instructional facilitators. So it's the exact same language. So I think you can take that argument about how in the world can we do this in this $22 million decision and not consider that. And because we make the same decision with the $16 million instructional facilitators in the same manner. I spoke to the Department of Ed. They have no problem. They can administer this. It's not a problem. They don't have to hire any more people. I've spoken to others in the educational community. They have no problem with this. Folks who represent large numbers of workers in our educational, they don't have a problem with this. So that part, I guess. Now, as far as there was another question about, you know, the local control. You're right. This is an issue of local control and one little respect, and we've carefully carved away little pieces of local control. Remember, we did it with special reading in the early years, and then we did it with full-day kindergarten, and now we choose to do it with instructional facilitators in summer school, and we choose now to do it with food service. Those things are all outside the model. So my point is Wyoming teachers and schools are going to be held accountable for No Child Left Behind, and we have a research-driven model, and we have an updated cost utilization of that model, how the money's being spent. I think that's why we're elected to come down and make decisions and act on this deal. The money is not being spent as the research allocates it. And this, and why I chose this, there was a comment, well, we could go in and take any part of the model out and see if they have. I'm not proposing that. This amendment doesn't. And if you'll see why tutors on the front page, because tutors, along with instructional facilitators, have the largest effect size. This is maybe a smallest chunk of money, but maybe the most important money we spend in getting our at-risk kids, because those kids got to meet the bar. They have to graduate, or the No Child Left Behind sanctions are going to come into full force. And so I think this money should be spent as the research allocates that it should. And it's a very small part of the $1.3 million block grant, but I think this $22 million is very important. So with that, Mr. Speaker, I'd encourage your favorable consideration, and I thank the body for your attention to this. Thank you.
The motion is to adopt second reading amendment number 4 to Senate File 70. All of those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All of those opposed to the motion signify by saying no.
No.
Second reading amendment number 4 to Senate File 70 has failed. We are now on second reading amendment number 5.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm wearing my time out to Mike, and I appreciate your consideration. We've had this debate already. I would just tell you, as I move amendment number 5 to Senate File 70, Mr. Speaker, that this is the $500,000 part of that debt on food services that will go to activating the federal match. Now, this money has kind of come through the block, and it hasn't been specified. And so in the report from our consultants, they said we should pull this money out and have it very evident that we give it to the districts for this purpose. And so that's what this is, and it removes the $4 million then that was added in a previous amendment. So this would add $500,000 and remove the $4 million. We've had a lot of debate on this, and so I'd stand for any questions, if there's any questions, what the amendment would do.
Representative Jorgensen.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to speak in support of this amendment. This seems to straighten out the whole issue of food service for the next year. And not much was said about the value of nutrition from this program, but I think I heard someone say that their child got 2 chicken nuggets, and I assume those were deep fried. And I don't think those are very nutritional. I think this whole issue needs to be logically done. Representative Harshman's motion does take care of it for a year. No one need worry. We'll do what we say we ought to do. Urge you to support the amendment. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Landon.
Mr. Speaker, I also urge that we support this amendment. You know, I never thought I'd be standing here or sitting here as I did in the earlier amendment, 15 years after serving on a school board where this type of discussion needs to take place. Never in my wildest imagination would I have thought that this would take place in this body. And I think that, that this amendment will support the free and reduced lunches for the people in the schools who really need it, and give us time to work through this and not just kind of throw money at it. Unfortunately, Mr. Speaker, that's my opinion of the earlier thing we did, and I think that this is a much more logical approach. So on and for the amendment.
Representative Warren.
Mr. Speaker, I don't want to spend a lot of time talking about this, but I do have a question for the author. First of all, I would say I would like to not support this amendment because I think the previous amendment we voted on, we supported it. Let's go with what the plan was in the bill. But a question on this particular amendment that I do have for the author, and that is, does this amendment just put the funding in, the $500,000, and does it delete the whole section in the bill where it talks about the accountability in the schools and what they go through to report and all the feedback that they're required to give in spending down this funding? Thank you.
Further discussion prior to the sponsor. Representative Harshman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To answer the good lady from Albany, it does delete that. Of course, we can come back and add that on third reading. We kind of all know the issue now. Once again, I was told earlier when we put this money in that it would be data-driven, not emotional. I still haven't seen 1 ounce of data on this issue. It's all been about this kid's poor, that kid comes to school dirty, this kid's hungry. I haven't seen one piece of data. I don't know where the money's going. I don't know who's got the deficit. I don't know any of that. So this $500,000 is, in fact, the only data in the PICA study. This has been taken out of the model. This will be now visibly given to the districts to meet the federal match. And so I would hope you'd support this data-driven amendment and ask for your consideration. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
The motion is to adopt second reading amendment number 5 to Senate File 70. All of those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All of those opposed to the motion signify by saying no.
No.
Second reading amendment number 5 to Senate File 70 has failed. Division barely being called. All those in favor of second reading amendment number 5, please stand. All of those opposed to second reading amendment number 5, please stand. Second reading amendment number 5 to Senate File 70 has failed. We are now on second reading amendment number 6. Mr. Speaker, pro tem.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move second reading amendment number 6 to House Bill 70. And I know it's late, and I know we've talked about this bill in great detail. This is an amendment that I came down here to this legislative session with, and I'd urge you to just take a few minutes of your time and listen to what I have to say, and then vote, because I think it's a matter of policy. If you take the top 10% of students in India and China, that's more students than we have in the United States, all put together. In the next year, 1.3 million students will graduate from college in the United States. There will be 3.1 million students graduating college in India and 3.3 million students graduating college in China. In 10 years, China will be the number one English-speaking country in the world. We used to have a monopoly on education in the world because we owned all the books. But that's changed now with the advent of the Internet. And with the change in the world, we need to change the way we think about things. I had an opportunity with a few of my brothers and sisters of the 59th Legislature to attend a legislative conference in Seattle where we heard the richest man in the world say, "We are currently preparing students for jobs and technologies that don't yet exist in order to solve problems we don't know yet." And with that, I ask you the question, are we providing the tools necessary for our children to compete in the 21st century world? And can we do more? Well, I'd like to tell you about a marvelous program. It was a summer program that they developed in my community. It was so popular that I have photographs, if you'd like to see them, of parents lining up in front of the school, around the school, and down the block to enroll their students in this program. It was a summer enrichment program where kids whose parents wanted to enroll them and kids who wanted to participate could go to school and they could learn enriched education things, things like anatomy, things like visual math, things like advanced insects, things like how to be healthy as kids. And it was a marvelous program, and it worked very well. Until some folks said, well, that doesn't fit in the little box, and so we're not going to fund that anymore. And so what this budget amendment does is it simply creates another box so that we can still have the program and it can work. We're no longer competing with folks from other states. We're competing with the world. And it seems to me that if we aim our dollars at the lower half of our students, we'll hit what we aim for. This is outside the model funding. It's a summer enrichment program. The minimum is $5,530 for each elementary school. That's the minimum, so that if you don't have the students necessary, you get the minimum, or $7,930 for each secondary school. Above that, it's $500 for 6% of the ADM. Participation in the program is purely voluntary. This program is designed to allow every student and every child an opportunity to excel. If we raise the level of our water, all our boats float a little higher. I'd urge you to vote for this amendment.
Representative Hammonds.
Mr. Speaker, as the mother of a 33-5, get it? No, we had a bill earlier today that was to do something with 33-5s. Oh, my nuisance son who's a 33-5 who participated in enrichment programs. I spent my summer vacation working on recalibration with a number of my good friends in this room, and I really sympathize with those of you who didn't have that wonderful experience with us and don't have that foundation of information. But when we debated summer school, we had an amendment because originally summer school was for remediation. And we had quite a discussion about kids thinking summer school was punishment. And why couldn't we make summer school something that all kids would want to go to? And so we amended in the word enrichment, that summer school would be for enrichment and remediation. And the idea was that the program that was just described to us, that was so fantastic and had all these kids who wanted to be in it, that that's what summer school would be. So then what happened? It was interpreted by our good Department of Education to mean that every remediation program had to have enrichment in it. That was their interpretation. That was not the legislative intent. So the bill you see before us is not necessary. The original legislative intent was to have exactly what was described. The money is in the funding, and the question is the interpretation across the street. And so if we need that clarified, strengthened, perhaps we should do that. We don't actually need this because we have it in existing statute right now.
Representative McComey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, that's precisely why I ask you to support the earlier, I believe it was a second reading amendment, to this bill. For that language change that sends a message across the street.
Representative Dirks.
Mr. Speaker, yes, I applaud this concept, and as the previous speaker said, this is what we've been trying to do for a long time. The reason why I would resist this right now is it does still contain some of that same language requiring a very specific curricular approach. And I would just like to open it up to schools to do enrichment in many ways, do remediation in many ways. But yes, it's exciting to think that perhaps more and more on this body, we're realizing that if we can make summer school both an enrichment experience and a remedial experience, then everyone's going to gain. I don't particularly support this approach with the language of the requirements, however.
Representative Wallace.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I rise in support of this amendment, and the reason is that the summer school and extended day program that I deal with is specifically targeted at at-risk kids, and that's a good thing. But it didn't provide a way to fund the kind of programs that Tom just described that could, oh, my fellow colleague from the county I reside in just described, it would be a very good investment for us to provide those kind of funds across the state so that these kinds of innovative, exciting, encouraging, mind-expanding programs can be offered to all of our students, and especially the top-level students, to give them just that extra bump that can really make the difference in their lives and in our whole future. So on and for the amendment.
Representative Harshman.
Mr. Speaker, just a question of the bringer. I was just curious, I guess I don't know, but how much is actually in the model? I'd like to see a breakdown. I mean, we know we have money for gifted and talented, for accelerated instruction, enrichment programs. The summer school piece has been talked about in addition to the summer school, though. I guess I was wondering how much, in fact, we're looking at $3.4 million. I'm wondering what the price tag is right now in the model. And that should be easy enough to pull out. It's pretty transparent, but.
Representative Wallace.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I don't have an exact number of what's in the model specifically for gifted and talented students. I know that that's a figure that's based on, I think they are assuming 3% of the top students would be identified as gifted and talented. But what I can tell you is that in many school districts, they're using that fund inside of the model to provide gifted and talented teachers in individual schools, or sharing a gifted and talented teacher between several schools, and that money does not, the money that's in the model does not cover the cost of providing those teachers for the regular school year, so they're finding someplace else in the model where they can use a little money to beef up those programs in the districts that are really working on gifted and talented programs. So I think the whole gifted and talented thing probably needs to be looked at over the interim, but this is specifically focused at summer school. So I just ask you to kind of keep that in mind.
Mr. Speaker Pro Tem.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To briefly answer the questions of all of my friends, to the good minority whip, whether we intended it or not, I know that the people with the checkbook don't care, and they're not writing the checks, and they're not paying for the program, and so the program's going to be canceled. And that's dumb. To use the technical legal term, that's dumb. Okay? To my good friend from District Number 2, I don't think that the language is as severe as the language that you objected to before. It's on page 2, lines 13 and 14. It says, evidence of specific professional development and training for each program instructor. I think that that means that if you have teacher credentials in a specific area, that meets that message. I brought this amendment because I want this body to send a very, very clear message to the people across the street that we care about enhancing education for all of the children in the state that want to have their education enhanced. I'd urge you to vote for the amendment.
The motion is to adopt second reading amendment number 6 to Senate File 70. All of those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All of those opposed to the motion signify by saying no.
No.
Second reading amendment number 6 to Senate File 70 has failed. Senate File 70 having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 83.
Senate File 83, introduced by Senator Job, an act relating to Wyoming retirement regarding rehired retirees.
Senate File 83, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 84.
Senate File 84, introduced by Senator Job, an act relating to the fireman's pension account.
Senate File 84, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 88.
Senate File 88, introduced by Senator Meyer, an act relating to sentence and imprisonment, inmate medical parole.
There are some amendments. Representative Warren.
Mr. Speaker, I move second reading amendment to Senate File 88, amendment number 1. Members of the House, I wanted to just briefly mention about what the parole board does, because that will be related to this amendment. In going through all the budget process, you get a really wonderful in-depth view of all the agencies in the state. And the parole board is separate from the Department of Corrections. Sometimes the two are seen sort of as one, and they are very separate functions. And basically what the Wyoming Board of Parole does, and I just want to explain this real briefly, and then we'll look at the amendment and how it fits with understanding what the Board of Parole does. The Wyoming Board of Parole, by making informed decisions about the release of inmates based on the rehabilitation and by structuring release plans designed to ensure successful reentry into the community with appropriate levels of supervision and services, make the following contributions to the quality of life for Wyoming. This is their responsibility. Public safety through a reduction of crime, reduction in the costs of incarceration, reunification of families, and restoration of productive citizens to the community. Now that's the positive side. Individuals go through and they have to clear the Board of Parole, and the Board of Parole has very high standards. They rule out the risk of reoffending. They look at the person's good time. They do all these responsibilities, complete these, separate from the Department of Corrections, because the Department of Corrections would have a conflict of interest because they keep these individuals in prison. The reason I bring this up is the question was brought up about, well, what if an individual is released who's severely harmful to society or who's at risk and may go out and commit problems and so on. And in fact, the Board of Parole has a very high standard. And the members who serve on the Board of Parole also are 7 part-time citizen members appointed by the governor to serve 6-year terms. And so these are people that are on the ground. They're people like us, I hope. And they look at these individuals and they make these decisions. They would be involved very intimately with this whole process in this bill, where we are looking at the idea of the possible parole, medical parole of inmates. Now, to the amendment. Mr. Speaker, members of the House, what I would like to do is yesterday there was an amendment that had 4 parts presented and it passed. I'm bringing back an amendment to delete 2 of those parts, and I'll explain those briefly, what my amendment is. The first part is to delete the first section of the amendment yesterday, which changed the word from shall to may. And actually, in the bill, if you have the bill in front of you or if you are listening, on page 2, line 3, the first amendment changed the board shall, and the amendment yesterday made it into the word may. The reason I opposed that amendment yesterday, and I would ask for your support for the amendment today to put shall back in, is the idea of may. Again, some of this is sort of interpretation, but may makes it, well, maybe so, maybe not. And if we're going to pass legislation to have the Board of Parole looking at very limited number of cases, we're talking maybe two or three cases a year of individuals who fit these criteria, which again are very specific, we'll say the board may consider a medical parole upon release of a written certification by a licensed treating physician. I would like to have it be left as it was written, the board shall. That's the first part of the amendment. The second part of the amendment is on page 3 of the bill. And what the amendment yesterday did was it eliminated, if you look at page 3, lines 19 through 23, basically it eliminated the criteria that the medical, the parole board would look at, which is that the living arrangements are in place and in the community and sufficient resources are available to meet the inmate's living and medical needs and expenses. That has to be done before this person is sent out to the community. So here's the situation. There was actually an individual who they had asked for a commutation. The individual got that. He was dying from cancer from Cheyenne. This individual came to Cheyenne to get his cancer treatment, and he had resources in Cheyenne being a vet. So he was in the VA hospital, and he had family here. All that was there. However, it was lucky that it was here because his sentence was commuted, and he could have come back and done whatever. This bill says you don't get off the sentence. You still have the sentence. But you're going to be overseen by parole when you get out. And before you get out, we need to know you've got a place to go for health care. You've got insurance. You've got disability. You've got family. You've got a hospice center. If it's a hospice center where the person goes, the parole board has to make sure that there's not a safety issue. They're not going to send somebody into a hospice center that is going to be dangerous. I mean, that's their responsibility. And I know some of it is guesswork, but most of it is pretty good work. And so without having this here, it really sets up a situation of not having that oversight. Where are we going to send them? And there have been cases you've read about nationally where individuals have been taken out of shelters and put on streets, or taken out of hospitals and put on streets because the hospitals couldn't take care of them. Then they end up homeless. That's certainly not the intention of this bill. The intention of this bill is to put them into a facility so they can get the end-of-life care or real intensive care for their particular condition. So this amendment basically deletes those two sections, changes may to shall, and holds responsible the Board of Parole to find the living and resources available for the person if the person is considered eligible for release. Thank you.
Representative Gingrey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to divide the amendment. The first division would be 1 through 6, and the second division would be 7 through 17.
That is in order. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And if I could start with the first division, which is lines 1 through 6. I support both of these, but I wanted to make sure that's the most important one to me, is to get that shell back into the bill, because the may essentially defeats a lot of the purpose of the bill. And I have to back up just a little bit to explain why that needs to be shell. I've dealt with a few of these cases, not a lot. They don't come up that often, and where I've dealt with them is in a jail setting, which this bill does not deal with. But in a jail setting, because this will deal with just prison, so people that are incarcerated for more than a year. But occasionally you'll have someone in the jail, and again, all the medical costs are on the state, or if they're in jail, it's on the county. The difficulty is that when someone does have a life-threatening illness, suddenly your county or in this case the state suddenly has to pay those bills. I was involved with one case where a gentleman fell in his cell and broke his neck, actually, and paralyzed himself. Suddenly the county had bills coming in that were quite excessive. The only solution was to essentially cut him loose and let him go. And that way it got it off the county's payment. Another one I dealt with once was a gentleman had cancer and was dying from cancer. Again, that was very expensive treatment that the county would have had to have entered into. The state has entered into the same problems that the counties have encountered, and the counties have always dealt with it simply by just letting them go. And I think the state's coming at this at a, or at least through this bill, a much better way of doing it, having a procedure rather than letting everyone just sort of do this arbitrarily, come up with an idea of how to get them out of there. The commutation idea works, but it's not the greatest method because, again, once the governor has commuted their sentence, we have no oversight over that person. This way you're actually keeping your thumb on the person but through the parole system. You're letting them out of the prison, but you're keeping them under parole. If you don't pass this bill, understand these people are still going to be released. The state's not going to pay for these folks. They're going to release these folks through commutation, and essentially the person will be walking free. Even if they, let's pretend they, for example, they recover from cancer, we can't exactly put them back in. Under this bill, we still have them under our thumb under the parole method. So this is actually making sure that we follow through with what judges and juries have done. They've sentenced these people, and we're going to comply. By putting the may in there, and this is on page 2, line 3, what that's saying is what it originally said was the board shall consider a medical parole upon receipt of a written certification by a licensed treating physician that, and then there's some things that the physician has to say. The reason they switched to may, my understanding in the committee, and that's why this came in, I think, under a standing committee amendment, the committee was concerned that that everyone would start filing these, that there'd be a ton of these. I don't see that. The only way that would happen is if you had some treating physicians in the state of Wyoming that for whatever reason put their names to things that they shouldn't be putting their names to. I just don't believe that we have those type of physicians. The example was given that, well, what if your cousin's a doctor? Maybe your cousin will sign that. I still think even if that's your cousin, I'm not sure that physician's going to risk his medical license to lie about your medical need. Plus, there's a provision in the bill for the parole board to have a third party review your condition. By leaving it may, the board can essentially say, we're not going to look at any of these, and it defeats the whole purpose of the bill. It needs to be shall, in that the board shall look at the application. It doesn't mean the board shall grant it. That's totally discretionary to the board. But it needs to be that the board actually does look at each application that they get. Now, if I'm wrong and they get hundreds upon hundreds of these, which I highly doubt, then we can come back next year and change that. But I just think with May, that defeats the whole purpose of having this. And I would urge you to vote aye for Division 1.
Discussion Division 1, Representative Halliman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd rise to oppose this amendment, this division of the amendment. I think it's important that the board not have this additional duty to respond to every one of these medical letters that they would receive. If they receive multiple letters from an individual or a group of individual physicians, I think that this puts a burden upon them to respond to each one of them. I don't believe the board would have any interest in ignoring legitimate letters. I think the chances of that are much less than they are the chances of receiving excessive letters. So the Constitution is such, and I have that had passed out the other day on this issue, the LSO opinion on it, that our prison system is required to provide appropriate care, adequate care, and case-by-case care. I think the board, the parole board, should be able to respond to these medical letters on a case-by-case basis and not be forced to reply by this statute to every single letter that they receive. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further discussion to Division 1. The motion is to adopt Division 1 to Second Reading Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 88. That is on your amendment lines 1 through 6. All of those in favor of Division 1 signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All of those opposed to Division 1 signify by saying no.
No.
Division 1 to second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 88 has been adopted. Division being called. All of those in favor of Division 1 to second reading amendment number 1, please stand. All of those opposed to Division 1 to second reading amendment number 1, please stand. Division 1 to second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 88 has failed. Division number 1 to second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 88 is passed. We are now on Division 2. Representative Warren.
Mr. Speaker, I don't know if I need to expand any on Division 2. It's basically that the living arrangements, sufficient resources, that those are available before the individual can be released, given all the other circumstances are being met. I would like to leave that in the bill. I think it's an important structure. We could set up a circumstance of not knowing where this person's going to go. Thank you.
Representative Gingrey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would urge your adoption of this also. Here's the problem. If the parole board says yes, you know, and they go through all the things they need to go through, and they say, yes, you're terminally ill, we're going to go ahead and release you on medical parole, they shouldn't be releasing them back to the community if they don't know you have some place to go. This is putting a burden on the community that people are just being released back into the community without making sure there's some living arrangements, there's some sufficient resources, that there's somewhere in that community to actually treat the problem they have. If you have if you're going on medical parole, I would hope that you're being paroled to a community that has a medical facility that can treat your issue. It seems a little odd to release you to a small community that cannot treat you, unless you've decided to go home and just die, which is also their option, I guess. But I would hate to put the burden on these communities that the medical parole board or the parole board hasn't made sure that there are living arrangements available to you. And if there are not, then maybe they should not release you. If they make the determination that there's nothing they can do for you there, there's nothing we can do for you here, and just leave it at that. But again, this places too much of a burden on our communities if you don't leave this in there. So I urge you to vote aye.
Representative Hallinan, Division 2.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I rise against this division, also against the bill now. I think it's inappropriate for us to put an additional burden upon the parole board. The burden is sufficiently made by the United States Constitution. It's not appropriate, I don't believe, to require that the board make all these arrangements for the individual being paroled. Those arrangements should be made by the parolee himself or his family or other people, and then the parole should be requested and approved by the board. This bill puts a burden upon the board to make those arrangements for him. And I think that for that reason, I'd be against this division and also against the bill. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Meyer.
Mr. Speaker, on and for the amendment. I have seen this happen in my community, this very incident. If we don't have a place for these people to go and a chance for them to get the medical care that they need. It puts a burden on our local hospitals. They will have to take them without any means of receiving payment for their treatment. It's unfair to them. Many of them will be getting out of prison, have no money, no source of income. We need to see that they are taken care of in some form, and has been suggested by one of our previous speakers, if not, maybe then they need to stay incarcerated. But I do think that it is the responsibility of the parole board to see that there is a place for these people to go. So I urge you to support this amendment.
Representative Alden.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. On and for the amendment and on and for the bill. The very few cases that I have seen, and I do think we are talking about small numbers, as they will have to have a terminal illness. I think that the parole board is an appropriate vehicle by which to facilitate this, and I think they're most appropriate and have the resources to do it. I think that this type of incarcerated individual would have a terminal condition. They would be monitored by our parole and probation system. If they are released from the penal institution, there is a world of benefits open to them that are not going to cost the state. Medicare. If you have an older incarcerated individual that is 65, pronounced with bladder cancer, he's outside of the facility in a nursing home, and really is a rather immobile individual, he is entitled to Medicare. And then the burden is shifted to this federal system rather than the state system. And truly, the few cases I've seen, that these folks are so terminally ill that they simply do not pose a danger. So on and for the amendment and on and for the bill. Thank you.
Representative Gingrey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I just wanted to answer the one question. I think there was a little confusion as to how I read this is the parole board doesn't make any arrangements. What it says is the board may only grant a medical parole if it first determines that living arrangements are in place in the community and sufficient resources are available to meet the needs of the inmate. That appears to me that puts a lot of burden on the inmate to find those arrangements. It's not saying that the parole board has to go and do all this for them. If the parole board wants to help them, I guess they could. But I'm not reading in there where it says that they have to do this for the individual. If those living arrangements aren't in place, they can just simply deny it and say, you need to find a mechanism to get that arranged. And again, I would just remind everyone, what we're trying to do here is sort of two things. One, it's saving the state money. We're trying to get out of having to pay for all these medical needs of people that are essentially dying. And number two, instead of using the system that we use now, commutation, where we let them go and we have no idea what happens to them after that, it's keeping them under our thumb. We're keeping them under the parole system, so they're being checked on a regular basis by a probation and parole officer. So this seems to be a great benefit to our state. So I would urge you to vote aye on the Division 2 and aye on the bill.
Representative Dave Zwanitzer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. As I read this bill, I think this allows the parole board to put people into nursing homes, which could cost the state lots of money, $3,000, $4,000, $5,000 a month. If you have an elderly inmate who requires daily feeding, then the living arrangements that are in place in the community and sufficient resources, also then we're going to have to pay their medical needs and all their expenses. So I would ask you to vote no on this amendment and yes on the bill.
Representative Alden.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. There is a small geriatric unit at the Wyoming State Penitentiary that does accommodate prisoners such as the good representative from the Laramie County area just spoke of, so that we are already accommodating that need on site at the state penitentiary. Thank you.
Representative Warren.
Mr. Speaker, just a couple comments. One is, in the testimony, the parole board is very much in favor of this bill. So there was a concern about putting more responsibility on their shoulders. This is what they do. They are very supportive of this bill and that we move forward with it. This is what they're pretty familiar with. It's a two-sided decision. It's not just that those resources are available, which perhaps the inmate will determine, perhaps the inmate is so ill, inmate's family will determine. But it's also to make sure that this site or this place to where this individual is going to go is also not going to be harmed by the inmate being there. So it, the parole board is going to oversee the entire process. And some of you may have gotten letters. Certainly if you're in this business, you're going to be getting letters from inmates occasionally. It's not really easy for them to make all these connections out in the real world when they're on the inside, and then add to that being very ill. So the parole board is used to this sort of work. They've asked for this bill. I think if it were an additional responsibility, they would have not supported this in committee or even considered that this bill would be worthwhile. So I would ask for your consideration and support of this amendment. Thank you.
The motion is to adopt division number 2 to second reading amendment number 1 to Senate file 88. All of those in favor of division 2 signify by saying aye. All of those opposed to Division 2 signify by saying no.
No.
All of those in favor of Division Number 2, please stand. Division number 2 to second reading amendment number 1 to Senate file 88 has been adopted. We are now on second reading amendment number 2. Representative Bagby.
Mr. Speaker, I respectfully withdraw amendment number 2 to Senate file 88.
Thank you. Seeing no objection, second reading amendment number 2 to Senate file 88 has been withdrawn. We are now on second reading amendment number 3. Chairman Buchanan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move second reading amendment number 3 to Senate file 88. Ladies and gentlemen, just some small changes. Page 4, line 14, delete the word judge, insert court. The board needs to provide the prosecuting attorney and the sentencing court with prior notice of, not necessarily the sentencing judge. May not be the same judge anymore, but if we put court in there, it goes back to the court, and if it happens to be the same judge, it'll get to the same judge that presided over the sentencing. Page 4, line 21, after reports, I thought it was important that they report back at intervals of not more than 6 months. I think it's important that if we let these folks out, that we get those medical progress reports in a fairly timely manner, at least twice a year, and that's the amendment. Thank you.
Representative Gingrich.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I rise in support of the amendment, and I find it's a good idea that they're reporting back, because I've been in that one case I mentioned about the cancer. We kept checking back to see if he had recovered or not. And I just want to take the opportunity to point out, I think there's some concern and some confusion about this bill, that this is an opportunity for people to go free. Understand that no matter what, they're going to get out, because the state's not going to spend this money. It's going to be done through a commutation. If it's done through a commutation, we have no control over that individual. A murderer, rapist, whatever, they get cancer, the governor's going to commute them potentially. I'm not going to speak for what he would actually do, but let's hypothetically say he commutes them. There is no oversight over that person anymore. They're out there. Let's say they recover, we still have no oversight. This gives us the oversight over those people, and the six-month review seems to be an appropriate amount.
The motion is to adopt second reading amendment number 3 to Senate file 88. All of those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All of those opposed to the motion signify by saying no. Senate file 88 having been read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered.
Mr. Speaker.
Representative Teeters.
May I please have privilege of the floor?
Certainly may.
You know, it's not very often that we get people down to the state capitol from Liberia, but today we have that privilege. My sister-in-law, Lori Eklund, and her guest, Barbara Joe, are in the south balcony. Please welcome them to the house.
Messages from the Senate.
Message number 241. Mr. Speaker, the President appointed Senate conferees to meet with the Light Committee number 1 from the House on amendments to House Bill 17. The Senate conferees are Senator Von Flattern, Chairman, Senator Nicholas, Senator Job. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 242. Mr. Speaker, House Bill 6, State Veterans Museum. The Senate adopted the Joint Conference Committee number 1 report on the bill listed above by the vote indicated. Ayes 26, noes 3, excused 1. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 243. Mr. Speaker, the bills listed below pass the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill 3, Campaign Finance Reporting Electronic Filing. Ayes 22, noes 8. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 244. Mr. Speaker, House Bill 33, Veterans Property Tax Exemption. The House bill listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 29, noes 1. The Senate respectfully asks the House to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 245. Mr. Speaker, the bills listed below pass the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill 75, Legislative Per Diem. Ayes 27, noes 3. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 246. Mr. Speaker, House Bill 86, Reverse 9/11 Emergency Systems. The House bill listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 26, noes 4. The Senate respectfully asks the House to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 247. Mr. Speaker, the bills listed below pass the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill 135, Fuel Disclosure. Ayes 29, noes 1. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 248, Concurrence Requested. Mr. Speaker, House Bill 136, Dyed Fuel Enforcement. The House bill listed above passed on a third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 29, noes 1. The Senate respectfully asks the House to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 249. Mr. Speaker, the bills listed below pass the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill 141, Forcible Entry and Detainer Amendments. Ayes 27, noes 3. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 250. Mr. Speaker, the bills listed below pass the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. House Joint Resolution number 10, Radio Stations. Ayes 27, noes 3. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 251. Mr. Speaker, the bills listed below pass the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill 133, Taxation of Helium. Ayes 26, noes 4. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 252. Mr. Speaker, the bills listed below failed to pass the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill 142, Driver Services Fees. Ayes 12, noes 18. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk.
Appointment of Conference Committee to Senate File 69. Conference Committee number 3. That's Chairman Childers, Representative Brown, Representative Thompson. The naming of Conference Committee number 2 to Senate File 22. 1. Representative Edmonds, Chair,
Representative Harshman, Representative McComey. Chairman Childers.
Mr. Speaker, that conference committee on Senate File 69 will not be meeting upon adjournment today, but we'll be meeting at 8 o'clock tomorrow morning in S-14, which is the Senate TRW meeting room.
Representative Korberg.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your conference committee number one on Senate File 18 has been rescheduled for tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock a.m. in H-18.
Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your House Conference Committee on House Bill 17 will meet in H-13 upon adjournment.
We're now at that order of business of signing of enrolled acts. The reading clerk will read the first enrolled act, being House Enrolled Act Number 28.
House Enrolled Act Number 28, being original House Bill Number 48, an act relating to state loan and investment board loans, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
I am about to sign House Enrolled Act Number 28, being original House Bill 48. I have so signed. The next House Enrolled Act will be number 29.
House Enrolled Act number 29, being original House Bill number 57, an act relating to homeland security, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
I am about to sign House Enrolled Act number 29, being original House Bill 57. I have so signed. The next House Enrolled Act is number 30.
House Enrolled Act number 30, being original House Bill number 109, an act relating to telecommunications, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
I am about to sign House Enrolled Act number 30, being original House Bill 109. I have so signed. The next House Enrolled Act will be number 31.
House Enrolled Act number 31, being original House Bill 98, an act relating to professions and occupations regarding speech pathologists, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
I am about to sign House Enrolled Act number 31, being original House Bill 98. I have so signed. The next House Enrolled Act will be number 32.
House Enrolled Act number 32, being original House Bill number 6, an act relating to the State Veterans Museum, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
I am about to sign House Enrolled Act number 32, being original House Bill 6. I have so signed. The next House Enrolled Act will be number 33.
House Enrolled Act number 33, being original House Bill number 3, an act relating to campaign finance reporting, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
I am about to sign House Enrolled Act number 33, being original House Bill 3. I have so signed. The next House Enrolled Act will be number 34.
House Enrolled Act number 34, being original House Bill 75, an act relating to the legislature, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
I am about to sign House Enrolled Act number 34, being original House Bill 75. I have so signed. The next House Enrolled Act will be number 35.
House Enrolled Act number 35, being original House Bill 135, an act relating to standards for petroleum products, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
I am about to sign House Enrolled Act number 35, being original House Bill 135. I have so signed. The next House Enrolled Act will be number 36.
House Enrolled Act Number 36 being original House Bill Number 133, an act relating to taxation and revenue providing for the taxation of helium as specified, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
I am about to sign House Enrolled Act Number 36 being original House Bill 133. I have so signed. The next House Enrolled Act will be number 37.
House Enrolled Act number 37 being original House Bill number 141, an act relating to civil procedure amending the forcible and entry detainer provisions, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
I am about to sign House Enrolled Act number 37 being original House Bill 141. I have so signed. The next House Enrolled Act will be House Enrolled Joint Resolution number 2.
House Enrolled Joint Resolution number 2 being original House Joint Resolution number 10, a joint resolution requesting Congress to support the Local Radio Freedom Act, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
I am about to sign House Enrolled Joint Resolution number 2 being original House Joint Resolution number 10. I have so signed. The next enrolled act will be Senate Enrolled Act number 24.
Senate Enrolled Act number 24 being original Senate file number 13, an act relating to the Mental Health Professions Practice Act, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
I am about to sign Senate Enrolled Act number 24 being original Senate file 13. I have so signed. The next Senate Enrolled Act will be number 25.
Senate Enrolled Act number 25 being original Senate file number 25, an act relating to the Wyoming National Guard, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
I am about to sign Senate Enrolled Act number 25 being original Senate file 25. I have so signed. The next Senate Enrolled Act will be number 26.
Senate Enrolled Act number 26 being original Senate file number 30, an act relating to commercial vehicles, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
I am about to sign Senate Enrolled Act number 26 being original Senate file 30. I have so signed. The next Senate Enrolled Act will be number 27.
Senate Enrolled Act number 27 being original Senate file number 36, an act relating to public health and safety, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
I am about to sign Senate Enrolled Act number 27 being original Senate file 36. I have so signed. The next Senate Enrolled Act will be number 28.
Senate Enrolled Act number 28 being original Senate file number 63, an act relating to the Wyoming Wildlife and Natural Resource Funding Act, being enacted by legislature of the state of Wyoming.
I am about to sign Senate Enrolled Act number 28 being original Senate file 63. I have so signed. The next Senate Enrolled Act will be number 29.
Senate Enrolled Act number 29 being original Senate file number 81, an act relating to fire protection districts, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
I am about to sign Senate Enrolled Act number 29 being original Senate file number 81. I have so signed. The next Senate Enrolled Act will be number 30.
Senate Enrolled Act number 30 being original Senate file number 66, an act relating to community juvenile services, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
I am about to sign Senate Enrolled Act number 30 being original Senate file 66. I have so signed. The next Senate Enrolled Act will be number 31.
Senate Enrolled Act number 31 being original Senate file number 76, an act relating to private roads, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
I am about to sign Senate Enrolled Act number 31 being original Senate file 76. I have so signed. The next Senate Enrolled Act will be number 32.
Senate Enrolled Act number 32, being original Senate File number 87, an act relating to the administration of government, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
I am about to sign Senate Enrolled Act number 32, being original Senate File 87. I have so signed. We are now at that order of business of bills on third reading and final passage. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move third reading consent list of Senate File 5, Senate File 28, Senate File 38, Senate File 42, Senate File 53, Senate File 56, and Senate File 71.
Are there any members wishing to remove any of these bills from the third reading consent list? Seeing none, the reading clerk will read all of the bills through the enacting clause.
Senate File 5, introduced by Senator Fecht, an act relating to criminal offenses regarding peace officers, probation, and parole agents, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming. Senate File 28, introduced by Capital Financing, an act relating to public funds, investment of state funds, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming. Senate File 38, introduced by Senator Case, an act relating to descriptive terms for persons with cognitive deficiencies, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming. Senate File 42, introduced by Senator Ross, an act relating to the courts, Wyoming Court Security Act, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming. Senate File 53, introduced by Appropriations, an act relating to public funds, the Common School Reserve Accounting account funding, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming. Senate File number 56, introduced by the Select Water Committee, an act relating to water development project, Omnibus Water Bill Construction, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming. And Senate File 71, introduced by Senator Schiffer, an act relating to the Hathaway Scholarship Program, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
Having been read three separate times, the question is, shall Senate File 5, Senate File 28, Senate File 38, Senate File 42, Senate File 53, Senate File 56, and Senate File 71 pass the House? Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Alden. Aye. Anderson. Anderson.
Aye.
Bagby.
Aye.
Berger.
Aye.
Blake.
Aye.
Brechtel.
Aye.
Brown.
Aye.
Buchanan.
Aye.
Childers.
Aye.
Kraft.
Aye.
Davison.
Aye.
Dirks.
Aye.
Dockstetter. Edmonds, Edwards, Esquivel F, Esquivel K, Gilmore, Gingery, Goggles, Hales, Hallinan, Hammonds, Harshman, Harvey, Eichel, Illaway, Yagi, Jones, Jorgensen, Landon, Lockhart, Lubno, Madden, Martin, McComey, Mercer, Meyer, Miller, Millen, Millen, Olson, Peterson, Philp, Philp, Korberg, Samuelson, Simlick, Shepperson, Simpson, Slater, Stewart, Stubson, Teeters, Thompson, Throne, Wallace, Warren, White, Swanitzer Dan, Swanitzer Dave, Mr. Speaker, Philp, Philp excused. I am about to close the vote. Are there any changes? The vote is closed, 59 ayes, 1 excused. As to Senate File 5, are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed, 59 ayes, 1 excused. As to Senate File 28, are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed, 59 ayes, 1 excused. As to Senate File 38, are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed, 59 ayes, 1 excused. As to Senate File 42, are there any changes? Madden, aye to no. Are there any other changes? The vote is closed, 58 ayes, 1 no, 1 excused. As to Senate File 53, are there any changes? Esquivel K, aye to no. Are there any other changes? The vote is closed, 58 ayes, 1 no, 1 excused. As to Senate File 56, are there any changes? Esquivel K, aye to no. Lubno, conflict. Lubno, conflict. Are there any other changes? The vote is closed. 57 ayes, 1 no, 1 excused, 1 conflict. As to Senate File 71, are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 59 ayes, 1 excused.
Having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the House, Senate File 5, Senate File 28, Senate File 38, Senate File 42, Senate File 53, Senate File 56, and Senate File 71 have passed the House. We are now at that order of business of requests to concur with Senate amendments to House bills. Our first message for our consideration is found in message 244 on House Bill 33. Chairman Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move concurrence on message number 244 on House Bill 33 and would ask you to vote aye even after I explain what they've done. They put a $2,900,000 appropriation on this bill, which when we had the bill, we didn't have those figures. However, I'm asking you to vote aye because even if there's not much adjustment on that, even if we have a concurrence, and the present legislation that's on the books now would also add $2,900,000, according to this. So the program was received so well last year after we passed that bill that they actually ran a little bit short, and then the $2,900,000 are the figures that's going to take us through the biennium on this veterans property tax refund. And so, as I see it, anyway, is that regardless if we go back and kill the bill or the present legislation still on the books, still going to cost the estimated same amount of money.
We are now voting on the motion to concur with Senate amendments to House Bill 33. A majority of the elected members is required. The chief clerk will call the roll.
Alden. Aye. Anderson. Aye. Bagby. Aye. Berger. Aye. Blake. Aye. Brechtel. Aye. Brown. Aye. Buchanan. Aye. Childers. Aye. Kraft. Aye. Davison. Aye. Dirks. Aye. Dockstetter. Aye. Edmonds. Aye. Edwards. Aye. Esquivel F. Aye. Esquivel K. Aye. Gilmore. Aye. Gingery. Aye. Goggles. Aye. Hales. Aye. Hallinan. Hammonds, aye. Harshman, aye. Harvey, aye. Eichel, aye. Illaway, aye. Yagi, aye. Jones, aye. Jorgensen, Landon, aye. Lockhart, aye. Lubno, aye. Madden, aye. Martin, aye. McComey, aye. Mercer, aye. Meyer, aye. Miller, aye. Millen, aye. Olson, aye. Peterson, aye. Philp excused, Korberg, Samuelson, Simlick, Shepperson, Simpson, Slater, Stewart, Stubson, Teeters, Thompson, Throne, Wallace, Warren, White, Swanitzer Dan, Swanitzer Dave. Mr. Speaker, I am about to close the vote. Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 58 ayes, 1 no, 1 excused.
By your vote, you have voted to concur with Senate amendments to House Bill 33. The next message for our consideration is found in Message 246 on House Bill 86. Chairman Illaway.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move concurrence on Message 246 to House Bill 86, Reverse 911 Emergency Systems. The Senate added two paragraphs to this. On the bottom of page 2, they added, and that's comes right on line 21, they added, effective January 1, 2009, the governing body shall file with the Wyoming Public Service Commission a certified statement of its annual gross receipts and detailed and itemized annual expenditures of any taxes collected pursuant to this act from 2004 through and including the most recent calendar year. And then prior to the bottom of page 2, they also added, for any 911 emergency reporting system that operates a reverse 911 warning system, a quarterly test on the warning system will be conducted by calling random numbers. This sounds like a good idea on the random numbers, just to make sure that it does work. I'm sure they wouldn't call too many, but it would be helpful to make sure it does work. And the other amendment, calling for an item, our certified statement of its annual gross receipts in detail, shows what this is going to cost, that would be before the Public Service Commission. So I urge an aye vote on this concurrence.
We're now voting on the motion to concur with Senate amendments to House Bill 86. A majority of the elected members is required. The chief clerk will call the roll.
Alden. Anderson. Anderson. Bagby. Berger. Blake. Brechtel, aye. Brown, aye. Buchanan, aye. Childers, aye. Kraft, aye. Davison, aye. Dirks, aye. Dockstetter, aye. Edmonds, aye. Edwards, aye. Esquibel F, aye. Esquibel K, aye. Gilmore, aye. Gingery, aye. Goggles, aye. Hales, Hallinan, Hammonds, aye. Harshman, aye. Harvey, aye. Eichel, aye. Illaway, aye. Yagi, aye. Jones, aye. Jorgensen, aye. Landon, aye. Lockhart, aye. Lubno, aye. Madden, aye. Martin, aye. McComey, aye. Mercer, aye. Meyer, aye. Miller, aye. Millen, aye. Olson, aye. Peterson, aye. Philp excused, Korberg, aye. Samuelson, aye. Simlick, aye. Shepperson, aye. Simpson, aye. Slater, aye. Stewart, aye. Stubson, Teeters, Thompson, Throne, Wallace, Warren, White, Swanitzer Dan, Swanitzer Dave, Mr. Speaker, Anderson. I'm about to close the vote. Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 59 ayes, 1 excused.
By your vote, you have voted to concur with Senate amendments to House Bill 86. The next message for our consideration is found in Message 248. On House Bill 136, Chairman Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move concurrence on message number 248 for House Bill 136. They amended it a couple of times, but the First Amendment was deleted by the Second Amendment, and all they did is change without a little word about without limitation and said to do it under inspection. During an inspection under or during a weight safety inspection. So it just tightens it up a little bit. And then on the dyed fuel, they wanted to say a state trooper or special enforcement officer may, upon probable cause, to believe that the vehicle is operating in violation of this running on dyed fuel, can withdraw and inspect any diesel fuel. And this is this just helps it out a little bit, I think. I think it's a good change to the bill, and I urge your support.
We are now voting on the motion to concur with Senate amendments to
Mr. House. Speaker, I'm sorry, I had a question.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
I'm sorry, I don't have the engrossed copy, but page 2, line 21 at the bottom. I'm assuming that this amends the sentence that says an investigator, trooper, or authorized personnel may, without limitation, withdraw and inspect any diesel fuel, period. And then it adds, a state trooper or special enforcement officer may, upon probable cause, to believe that the vehicle is operating in violation of this paragraph or other law, withdraw and inspect any diesel fuel. What's the difference? The sentence before it seems to me doesn't require probable cause to withdraw and inspect any diesel fuel. Was that deleted? Right, without limitation. Okay, page 2, line 20. Delete without limitation and insert during an inspection under. Okay, I'm all right. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
We're now voting on the motion to concur. Representative Gingrey.
Mr. Speaker, I guess that raised questions, though, for me. I'm not sure the use of probable cause. It made more sense when it without limitation was there, and it also makes sense during a waiter safety inspection. But having the probable cause in there, I don't see how this would ever actually happen unless the officer had knowledge from someone, like someone had ratted him out, and that was the probable cause. But it seemed to make more sense without limitation that they could pull over and do these inspections. Now, the only time, I just don't see the probable cause ever actually coming into play. The only time this is going to happen is during a weight or safety inspection. It almost makes more sense to get rid of the last part and not even have that in there. And maybe the good chairman can explain why they left that in there. But with the probable cause there, I think that caused a problem. And actually, I would go back to, you know, under something like that, I'd actually use a lesser standard. Reasonable suspicion appears to be the better standard, perhaps, to use for that.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Sorry, I asked a question about your bill. I like the probable cause insertion here. I'm not sure whether that's the right standard, reasonable suspicion, probable cause. But it does away with the inspection without limitation, which I had a problem with. And now it's at least it's got some standard in it. So, you know, every farmer or rancher driving down the road who is pulled over and inspected. And now that there needs to be some probable cause in there. So I would support the concurrence.
We are now voting on the motion to concur with Senate amendments to House Bill 136. A majority of the elected members is required. The Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Alden. Aye. Anderson. Aye. Bagby. Aye. Berger. Aye. Blake. Aye. Brechtel. Aye. Brown. Aye. Buchanan. Aye. Childers. Aye. Kraft. Aye. Davison. Aye. Dirks. Aye. Dockstetter. Aye. Edmonds. Aye. Edwards. Aye. Esquivel F. Esquivel K. Aye. Gilmore. Aye. Gingery. No. Goggles. Aye. Hales. Aye. Hallinan. Aye. Hammonds. Aye. Harshman. Aye. Harvey. Aye. Eichel. Aye. Illaway. Aye. Yagi. Aye. Jones. Aye. Jorgensen. Aye. Landon. Aye. Lockhart. Aye. Lubno. No. Madden. Aye. Martin. Aye. McComey. Mercer. Meyer. Miller. Millen. Olson. Peterson. Philp excused. Korberg. Samuelson. Simlick. Shepperson. Simpson. Slater. Steward. Stubson. Teeters. Thompson. Throne. Wallace. Warren. White. Swanitzer Dan. Swanitzer Dave. Mr. Speaker, I'm about to close the vote. Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 53 ayes, 6 noes, 1 excused.
By your vote, you have voted to concur with Senate amendments to House Bill 136. We're at that order of business of consideration of joint conference committee reports. And ladies and gentlemen, you have before you three reports. One of them, we have found a technical correction that will need to be made, and we'll present that tomorrow, that being the conversation on House Bill 55. The first report for our consideration is Joint Conference Committee Number 1 on House Bill 8. Chairman Elloway.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move Joint Conference Committee Report Number 1 to House Bill 8, Election Code Revisions, and ask for your favorable vote. Where we were, the question came up about regarding page 10, line 12, and if I may, let me read the sentence. The ballot box shall not again be opened until the polls are closed, except when necessitated by operation of voting equipment at direction of the county clerk and only in the presence of two or more election judges. And we added with different political party affiliations, and that was the crux of the party question, because it did say from different major parties if possible. We changed it to with different political party affiliations. I call for your positive vote.
Further discussion. We are now voting on the Joint Conference Committee Number 1 report to House Bill 8. A majority of the elected members is required to adopt the report. The Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Alden. Anderson. Bagby. Berger. Blake. Brechtel. Brown. Buchanan. Childers. Kraft. Davison. Dirks. Dockstetter. Edmonds. Edwards. Esquivel F. Esquivel K. Gilmore. Gingery. Goggles. Hales. Hallinan. Hammonds. Harshman. Harvey. Eichel. Illaway. Yagi. Jones. Jorgensen. Landon. Lockhart. Lubno. Madden. Martin. McComey. Mercer. Meyer. Miller. Millen. Olson. Peterson. Philp excused. Korberg. Samuelson. Simlick. Shepperson. Simpson. Slater. Steward. Stubson. Teeters. Thompson. Throne. Wallace. Warren. White. Swanitzer Dan. Swanitzer Dave. Mr. Speaker, I am about to close the vote. Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 59 ayes, 1 excused.
By your vote, you have adopted Joint Conference Committee Number 1 report to House Bill 8. The next report for our consideration is Joint Conference Committee Number 1 on House Bill 9. Chairman Elloway.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move Joint Conference Committee Report Number 1 to House Bill 9, Campaign Financing Reporting. If you remember, we were talking about political action committees. What it said was, except as otherwise provided in this section. I think, Mr. Speaker, I probably need a little bit more than just water. Except as otherwise provided in this section, no, thank you. No political action committee shall contribute directly or indirectly more than $2,300. It started out at $3,500. It went to $2,300. It came back to $3,500. And we split the baby and said $2,900 per election to any candidate for office other than a statewide office, no more than $4,600. This was $4,600, $7,000. We again split the baby and called it $5,800. And we kept the conviction, the civil penalty, up to $10,000. It's a good piece of legislation, and I would call for your aye vote.
Representative Hallinan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I know it's late, and I hesitate to even say another word, but I urge that you all resist this concurrence. I think that we're increasing the possible contributions from political action committees from $2,000 to $5,800 in one fell swoop. I think that presents the possibility of some severe involvement of lobbyists and special interests in our future legislation, and I urge that we do resist this concurrence. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Hammonds.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I have some good colleagues in here who watch for interesting metaphors, and splitting the baby just got their attention. As you know, that comes from King Solomon, and so I almost feel in some respects like he threatened to divide the baby, and of course you all know the rest of the story. The real mother said no, and rather than have the baby split, she would rather give it up. And this is my baby, and I would rather give it up. The truth is, and this was the compromise that we reached, if we do not go along with this, we could kill the bill, and we go back to what we currently have, and what we currently have is no limitation whatsoever on PAC contributions. So I don't like it, but I'm going to let my baby live, and so I would ask that you concur with the conference committee recommendation.
Further discussion. We're voting on Joint Conference Committee Number 1, Report to House Bill 9. A majority of the elected members is required to adopt this report. The Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Alden. Aye. Anderson. Aye. Bagby. Aye. Berger. Aye. Blake. Aye. Brechtel. Aye. Brown. Aye. Buchanan. Aye. Childers. Aye. Kraft. Aye. Davison. Aye. Dirks. Aye. Dockstetter. Aye. Edmonds. Aye. Edwards. Aye. Esquivel F. Esquivel K. Nope. Gilmore. Aye. Gingery. Aye. Goggles. Aye. Hales. Aye. Hallinan. No. Hammonds. Aye. Harshman. Aye. Harvey. Aye. Eichel. Aye. Illaway. Aye. Yagi. Aye. Jones. Aye. Jorgensen. Aye. Landon. Aye. Lockhart. Aye. Lubno. Aye. Madden. Madden. Aye. Martin. Aye. McComey. Aye. Mercer. Meyer, Miller, aye. Millen, aye. Olson, aye. Peterson, Philp excused, Korberg, aye. Samuelson, aye. Simlick, Shepperson, aye. Simpson, aye. Slater, aye. Stewart, aye. Stubson, aye. Teeters, aye. Thompson, aye. Throne, aye. Wallace, aye. Warren, aye. White, aye. Zwanitzer Dan, Zwanitzer Dave, Mr. Speaker, aye. I am about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Esquivel K, no to aye. Are there any other changes? The vote is closed. 56 ayes, 3 noes, 1 excused.
By your vote, you have adopted Joint Conference Committee Number 1, Report to House Bill 9. Committee announcements. Vice Chairman Jones.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 2, Appropriations, will meet at 9:30 tomorrow morning in room 204 to discuss interim topics with the Senate Appropriations Committee. This is a change from we were going to meet this afternoon on adjournment, but it's been changed to 9:30 tomorrow morning. Thank you.
Chairman Landon.
Mr. Speaker, your committee number 10, Labor, will meet it this afternoon on adjournment in H-17 with the Senate committee.
Representative Edmonds.
Mr. Speaker, your conference committee for Senate File 22 will meet with the like-minded committee tomorrow morning at 9:30 in S-11.
Chairman Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee revenue will meet tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock, H-11 discussion with the like committee from the Senate discussing interim topics.
Further announcements. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that clears the desk.
Mr. Speaker, I move that the House adjourn until 10 a.m. Wednesday, March 5th, 2008.
You have heard the motion and some have objected to. All of you in favor of the motion signify by saying aye. All those opposed say no. We are adjourned until 10 a.m. tomorrow morning.